they're witches, but you know that's implied.
Got the storytelling, ego swelling, pillow talking, moonlight walking, sea hags.
Welcome to the Sea Hags Podcast. I am Katie Nordgren.
And I am Chris Jeppa. And with us today is the lovely, talented, charming, handsome singer,
excessively
songwriter,
tall.
Dominique Frico, indie darling, Vancouver. Hi, Dom.
Hi, guys. Thank you for having me. How's it going? Good. It's going good. I just had a. I was repeating what I thought you would ask.
Good.
Me.
Good. Interview etiquette. You must have done this before. I like to repeat the question back again.
Yeah, I do like to repeat the question back again. Yeah. No, it's I'm doing good. I'm doing good. I had to get up early today for a Sunday, but I had a nap. Mm-hmm. And now I'm here and I'm fresh as a daisy.
Excellent.
Excellent.
Yeah.
It's we are also, Katie and I, both not super fresh as daisies.
No, fresh as something that is not, but something that has that not so fresh feeling.
Oh dear. But spring is in the air, so daisies we shall be.
We shall be cranky little daisies.
Cranky daisies.
Why are we so tired, Chris?
Well, Katie, you took me out on a hot date last night.
Sure did. That's just how I do.
Katie took me to the Keg. It was very fancy.
Yeah, I went to a steakhouse, did not order steak.
No, we got tuna.
Tuna.
Katie wore a blue
much tuna.
Vegetarian meals at the Keg. Love that. Tuna.
Just go there. Yeah, just go there to like troll the Keg. Do you have anything that
is this steak vegan? Actually.
No.
Yeah.
It's not.
Katie wore a very stylish blazer. We both wore.
I looked really good.
Really good statement necklaces.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we were really, it was our power dinner.
You mentioned this before, statement necklaces. I don't know what, explain. Can you elaborate upon statement necklaces?
Certainly.
Go ahead.
They are big old chunky, loud pieces of jewelry, basically, like a bib in necklace
form.
But
okay.
With BBs and spanglies.
So normally you wear a simple outfit and then you have a statement necklace.
Right, okay.
You wouldn't wear patterns and a statement necklace.
No,
that's just ridiculous.
Too, and I think some people
disgusting.
Would have seizures and shit if they saw you, maybe.
Potentially. Yeah, I'm not a doctor. I can't.
I was envisioning it's like one of those necklaces with like letters, like believe.
Yeah, like, it's a statement like
down with the man.
Yeah, I believe.
I have several of those.
I believe in wage parity.
Yeah,
it's my
statement
necklace.
I legitimately do have a statement necklace that says "feminist killjoy" on it.
Yes,
so
it's
that's
right,
a double.
Yeah.
That's two statements in one.
It's a double. Yeah.
This very shiny and purple, and then. Hey, watch out! I'm not fun at parties.
Okay. I was wondering. I was like, could you wear that with a loud dress? No.
You can do whatever you want, ultimately.
I do understand the concept that it's a free world, but I mean, like, you were saying before...
keep on rocking.
You were saying before about, like, a busy dress. Could that statement necklace be paired with... Or is that... you said it's a double statement necklace.
It's too much statement.
Too much statement.
Entirely too much statement.
Yeah. I think you wear that with your jeans and t-shirt and just try to look badass.
Yeah, that's what I do.
Women's fashion tips with Dom Frico.
Yeah. Yeah, right.
What a necklace.
Don't wear Uggs. And another fashion statement from Dominique Frico.
It's a very end fashion segment. Don't wear them.
I would say don't wear Uggs in Vancouver because they're like little sponges and they just absorb all the water. And
actually, it's weird that
yucky.
You would bring that up because on the way over here I stopped at the Van City because I like to bank with a credit union.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm very progressive in that way.
Socially responsible
Absolutely.
With your finances.
Fiscally responsible, socially responsible.
So
thank you. Thank you so much. But there's a guy who just... It, like, cut me off as I was crossing the street, and he ran full tilt, and it was, like, a 70-year-old man wearing very wet UGG boots. They were just completely saturated. They were throwing off so much moisture. I was like, think about it. It's not the day for shearling.
Yeah, no kidding.
They would smell so bad
afterwards. Oh, they did. I could smell them, and they were horrid.
Gross.
So that's what happened to me today. So I think we're all checked in.
Yeah. My week has been really
Let's backtrack. And
I've been vibing high. I've been running hot. Just, like, feeling very competent, lots of creative ideas, lots of good energy. I've been writing a lot, and I got a really cool job that I'm excited about and cannot talk about because it's not public yet, which is very exciting for me. I'm going to get to do some cool shit with someone I admire very much, and...
It's going to be fucking tight.
Yeah, so, like, I'm feeling good about it.
Yeah, you should.
Any other interesting things happened to you this week at all? I guess you got some green time...
Oh, yeah. I was like, wait, are you talking about weed?
Yeah, I was like, you just get high for 3 days? That's, yeah, it's easier to just get stoned.
If you know me, you know me. But no, I was house-sitting for my brother out in Port Moody, so I was like way in the boonies with these two little weird cats, and it was the best. It was just quiet for 3 days, and I got to be alone. It was so amazing. Yes.
Nice.
Anything exciting? I haven't seen you in a long time, it seems, Dom.
Yeah, like, no, it's been
a while. What's new? What's exciting?
what is new and exciting? I'm going into the studio this week to make my next solo album.
Mm.
So I'm quite excited about that. I've kind of like recently started playing around with a couple different elements. And it's like I have my Rhodes keyboard.
Nice.
And a loop station. And at first, when I first started, it was kind of like this like sort of like, like Phil Collins-y, Peter Gabriel kind of throwback, kind of.
A Genesis.
Yeah, not like Genesis in like the proggy, like mathy kind of way, but like just kind of like sort of get serious or but seriously, that kind of like 80s Phil Collins kind of simple.
No jacket required.
No jacket required.
But serious.
But no, isn't it but serious? Get serious? I obviously studied the album really hard, so I know the sound. Can't remember the album title. But, anyways, yeah, like but the problem is that the keyboard weighs like 150 pounds, and I was talking to a buddy of mine because I was like, I'm working on this thing, and the album, like, my producer is completely decided. He's like, we're going down this way.
It's nice.
Like, this is the sound, and I was talking to a buddy of mine. He's like, well, now you have to bring this to shows. Like, you can't just like bring a little dinky keyboard with like the appropriate sounds. Like, you have to bring your Rhodes to shows.
Good lord.
So it's like every time I play a show, I have a workout, and I've basically gotten a hand cart.
Yeah.
I've used my like the knowledge and the skills from my wine delivery days, and I roll my Rhodes out and up the stairs, and I pull. I'm usually sweaty by the time I'm loaded in to a venue.
Why can't you just have a keyboard with a Rhodes sound on it?
It's just, you know,
is it just shitty and ringing?
It's not the same, man. You gotta like, well, yeah, and I also don't have a keyboard that sounds as good. Like, I could get a Nord for like $4,000, or I could just get a hand cart for $100.
Just get the hand cart.
And then just, you know, work my bis and my tries and my
your lats. And your traps.
My traps. A good trap workout. That's what it's all about, this one. That's like,
gotta like shoulder, just this one.
The shoulder
this
curl one. When you're going up
this one
steps.
Right now. Yeah. Like, fuck yeah.
Yeah, fuck, yeah.
Fucking air.
But yeah, I played a really great show last week for the Folk Fest.
Nice.
I was opening for Amelia Curran.
Was that at the Fox Cabaret?
Fox Cabaret. Mm. It's my first time playing the Fox Cabaret, and I realized I knew the booker, and I was like, and I booked another show for August for the Folk Road Show.
How was it for music? I've only ever seen comedy there.
It was great.
It's a really cool venue.
Yeah.
It's like, it's funky looking.
Yeah.
There's like jizz ghosts everywhere because it used to be a porno theater. So it's just like, you just kind of walk in, you feel like that fun sort of sleazy.
See, the first thing that popped into my head was haunted by
jizz. Yeah.
That's a Dumb Freako original.
It is. We've all been haunted by jizz, right?
I mean, not all of us, but everyone here probably.
Yeah, I know. That's what I mean. Yeah.
Not everyone.
I can't speak for
universally.
Them.
You just pointed at the microphone.
Them.
All of our listeners could fit into this.
That's
microphone.
Where they are, right? They're inside there.
Are we touching them with our whispers?
Hello, in there.
Oh God, I can't wait to listen to this.
Are you just gonna repeat that on a loop for a while, Katie?
Maybe. Don't judge me.
You need to record a little ASMR thing so that Katie can just
sleep
it.
To it.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's probably creepy.
Sorry.
Are you familiar with ASMR?
No.
We've mentioned it, I think, on the podcast before. I don't know if we've ever explained it.
I was like, is that the name of your podcast? Or this is Sea Hags?
It is the Sea Hags. Right. No, ASMR, I could not tell you what it actually stands for, but basically it is using like visual triggers and auditory triggers to make you feel like really tingly and sort of sleepy and stuff. So you like listen to it in binaural headphones,
right.
And someone whispers to you. And it's like, it's pretty creepy actually, but I just really love it. Like, it's really awesome. So I'll listen to people whisper to me all the time.
There's like a huge YouTube phenomenon with it where it's like people just giving hand massages on video and like narrating it. Or
it's a very strange
thing. Or like going
thing.
Through like all of her makeup supplies or something and just being like, and here's a brush. and here's a little mascara.
And they like brush the microphone, so it's like all. Mm-hmm. It's very strange. It's a really weird thing, but
yeah,
you can get like millions of YouTube views doing it. So.
Yeah, so wow. you get off on that a little bit in a nice non-sexual way.
Yeah, yeah. it's definitely not sexual, yeah. but I'm sure for some people it is.
Mm-hmm. I have like the opposite where I get tingly like. Full body chills from certain sounds, but it's like really unpleasant. So whenever I hear like
I have
a toothbrush, so like brushing my teeth is a real challenge. I have to run water to like not hear it, or like scrubbing a brush on. Even just thinking about it, I'm like skin is crawling. Oh, like it makes me want to like just.
No, I have like there's a lot of sounds I really hate as well that make my skin crawl. Like people who chew really loudly or like breathe very loudly is super annoying. But. I'm mostly fine. It's just if I live with someone and I'm married to them, then anything that they do will annoy me because it's just like constant repetition.
This is a call out.
This is a call out post. It's fine. It's fine. We're fine.
The whispering thing has always like done it for me. I don't know what it is. Yeah, I remember being in like, grade 3, 2, 3, 4 and just like having somebody like help me at my desk. If they're whispering close enough to me, I just remember being like, I don't think I really understood it at the time, but I was probably getting a boner. Like I just remember like just being like, oh, it's so like all the hairs
that's
on the back
totally
of my neck.
That's totally what ASMR is. Like that is like, exactly what it is.
That's so nice. I don't want them to go away. Like, yeah.
It's like when you're a little kid and I don't know if boys do this because it's pretty socialized against it, but girls, like when you're sitting in an elementary school classroom or whatever, you're like listening to a story or whatever, you like touch each other's backs and hair and stuff, like right. play with each other's hair when you're 6, 7, 8 years old, and it's right. like ooh shivers that are really nice. Ooh. That's what it is. It's what it's about.
It's pleasant. Mm-hmm. One of the like in a non-sexual way, it's just nice to get your hair touched, and definitely
pat pat.
Yeah,
pat.
I preface it with that because then the next thing I'm going to say is like my friend's kids, like I let them braid my hair a lot and it's really nice. They're just so cute. They're like, oh, I braid your hair, and then you get to braid their hair.
And then you
I'm
touch
just,
it and they're like, oh, how are there like 18 pieces of wet candy in my hand right now?
Yeah, they're not good at it, but
oh, I look horrible after they're done.
You mean they're not good at like combing your hair or brushing your hair and
or braiding
it?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Yeah, but like, but they're good at the sensual. Yeah. Okay, that's good.
Dom just brushed my hair. It felt really nice.
We're having a sensual time in the Sea Hag Shack today.
I'm just gonna whisper into Katie's.
Oh no, don't. I don't know what's happening to me right now, but I think I'm getting a boner. That's happening. Well, shall we get into it? Shall we get into the meat of this?
Let's serve the steak.
Asking the hard-hitting questions.
Oh, right.
And, how about just, I was happy to see you, because we've been friends for a very long time, Dom, and friends with Katie as well, all around a similar time. So the majority of guests that we've had on this podcast so far have been like, hey, so we met in first year, and we're all really good friends.
Right.
And
nice.
So you're a continuation of the series.
Yeah.
In that way. And you were my first band.
That was a nice pause before band. I was like, what? Yeah. Yeah.
Tom's like, I don't remember.
No, I do remember. That would have been, yeah. And yeah. No, I was laughing about that in the last couple of days. Just like the fact that like, this was like, you know, you introduced me to Katie and you were the person who shot Spark That Screams, our band, when we were in first and second university, maybe third even.
Yeah. That's back when I thought I'd be a photographer.
I guess
I haven't picked up a camera in like 6 years probably.
Yeah. So you were an aspiring photographer.
As was every chick ever.
Yeah.
I was like, oh no, now everybody has a digital SLR. I quit. Bye.
Yeah.
It was my history with band photography.
Yeah. I found some of those because when you Google our band name, I found a photo that you had taken with us all looking sullen on a park bench.
You have to.
And I remember we were like so cool. We were like, everyone looking different directions, but not directly at the camera. Right. Like, that's a thing.
Totally.
That you still do.
Total parody of like an indie band photo shoot.
Yeah.
Like, that's
but
really.
We were taking ourselves pretty seriously, I thought.
Oh, very much so.
And I was like sitting down and I looked at like my shoes. I was wearing fucking Chaco sandals.
Oh, you were. You absolutely were.
And
I can imagine. I can remember
dorky.
The exact shirt that you were wearing. You had like
I
a button up.
Too.
You had like a blue button up bowling shirt with like flowers
shirt.
And stripes.
I don't know if I'd call it a bowling shirt.
It was a bowling shirt.
It was more like No.
It
was closer to like a Hawaiian shirt.
Sure, a Hawaiian
but
bowling
with like
shirt.
With embroidery.
That said, my name
shirt.
Is Dom and I love bowling. No, it's not. The best.
It wasn't a bowl. I would have worn a bowling shirt, but that don't diss that shirt like that. I have great memories of that shirt. I don't know where she went.
She?
Did the shirt have a name?
Mary Beth.
Can we talk to the shirt?
Mary Beth was her name.
Is the shirt with us today in memory?
Inside the actor's studio.
Yeah, can we speak?
If you light 7 candles and repeat after me.
I've got a
lot. We almost certainly have 7 candles.
There's lots of candles. There's a lot of crystals. Would a crystal
crystals?
A seance to my shirt would be amazing.
There's also a recurved bow and a quiver in here. Like, there is quite a mélange.
Mm-hmm.
A mélange.
So Spark That Screams. Yeah. That was the first band I ever followed around, I think. Wait.
From the Railway Club to the Media Club.
Yes. And back again. All like 4 blocks.
We were sort of like, it was fun. We were good. We were kind of a big deal in like a really niche like UBC arts community.
Yeah.
We won Battle of the Bands.
Oh, yeah, right.
With CITR, we got to open for Sloan. That was exciting. Mm-hmm. And that whole other festival.
They gave us $500.
I know.
Oh, my God.
Amazing, right?
$100 for all of you. Or 125. Yeah. Was it 4 members or 5
4
members?
4 members, yeah.
Nice.
Yeah. And I think we had to play 3 shows to win. So, I mean, if you break that up per show... That's
still like more money than you would normally be getting for music
at
that age.
I know, right?
Yeah, it was pretty. So it set the bar pretty high for me to be like, now I ask for lots of money. And just like right off the bat, I've barely played shows for free.
Right. That was good. Those are good times.
Yeah.
Very inspired times.
That album was so good. Like, I not even like good for being 21 or whatever, however old you were at the time. Like, I had that CD, I paid money for it.
Thank you.
Paid money for a physical CD. It was in this like little cardboard envelope, basically. Mm-hmm. And I listened to it till it broke, like till it fell apart. Honest to God. And it like broke into little pieces on the floor of my disgusting Mazda.
We should probably say that you can listen to it online.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We'll link to it. SparkThatScreams.bandcamp.com.
Something like that. Yeah. We'll stick a link up there. I really enjoyed it. And one of the reasons that band was so... had such a special place in my heart was because it was the first place that I learned how to collaborate with other musicians. Mm. And I think I mentioned this briefly, but, like, I am classically trained and, like, classical piano, and it was a real hindrance in terms of learning how to, like, improvise or write music.
You talked about that pretty extensively with Aaron, actually.
Oh,
the episode we did with Aaron.
So. Well, so this was the genesis of it, was, like, doing a jam with you guys and... writing out my parts on like staff paper and you just being like, could you loosen up a little bit? And then you guys taught me about weed and
was I part of that?
Took me up behind the whatever that weird cafe restaurant thing that was like in Kits where they had the blue martinis. What was that place called? It's now Nuba.
It's not
but
Sophie's Cosmic Cafe.
No, I don't know.
Now it's Nuba? What the hell is Nuba again? Nuba.
Lebanese food.
Oh.
It's really good.
It was like a Broadway and Balaclava-ish.
Yeah.
But and they wouldn't ID people, so I was like 17 and
Oh, is that where you went to get your wine for your vampire party?
No, it's a different place.
A different place you could go be served underage.
There were lots of places that I could go and be served underage. When I went to university, I was only 17. Mm-hmm. So I had 2 years of like university underage drinking.
Oh man.
Yeah,
I went on exchange before university, so by the time I got there it was like I had a month to wait and boom, I had my 19-year
ticket
card. Yeah. Yeah,
but yeah, I don't know,
it's funny thinking about like that you remember when you were too tense and like rigid, and I just think of you as like free flow and improvise and Chris, like it's so weird to be like, oh, I guess you did start out a bit like that. But what I loved about that band is that we started as like this folk acoustic trio.
Yeah, so we were playing like Jack Johnson covers
Josh would like bring out the bongos.
That's true.
Oh God,
I forgot about that.
And then
obnoxious.
And then we got Gavin Dew. You know, and he brought like
local
all
politician
of
Gavin
local,
Dew.
Local politician Gavin Dew, and
local
he brought
oil and gas man Gavin Dew. Sorry, we've diverged significantly.
We're gonna be sued.
Oh no, it's fine, Gavin. We love you, but your political leanings have taken a very divergent take from mine, and
so let's fight.
Yeah,
let's fight about it.
Let's just be kind
to
each other.
We should have him on the
podcast. I would actually totally do that.
That'd be a really interesting.
Maybe.
I'm like, I don't know. It could be interesting.
What scares you is good for you.
Oh, yeah.
Really? Our comfort zone.
Yeah.
But
but anyways, yeah. But
he was
like
a badass
electronic.
He was a metal drummer.
Right.
And
he's
but
a
then
really good drummer.
Really, really good drummer, and like had these amazing like sensibilities of like timing. you know, like time signature, like polyrhythmic shit. Like it was really cool. And then he had the drum kit. I think we jammed a few times with the drums. And then he was like, I also have all this electronic stuff that I'm programming. And it was so much easier to go to a gig to, like you were saying, with the Rhodes keyboard versus like whatever. Right. He didn't have to like bring a whole drum kit. He could just like bring the little electronics. And yeah, he programmed some sweet stuff, played things like backwards, put in lots of cool beats.
There's lots of science. So like, yeah, it was exciting. It was fun.
You had great songs. Like, oh God, that was so good. Mm-hmm. Even retrospectively, now that you guys have 11 years more of music experience, like, it was still such a good album.
Mm-hmm.
Such a weird, like, ephemeral moment, to put that down on
my recording. My first recording experience ever, too.
Oh, really? Yeah.
The very first time I was in the studio, and I remember the first thing that the producer... it was Tom Dobransky, I think.
What did he say, though? No, it's Tom Dobransky.
Yeah, he said, I played one pass through my thing, and he's like, oh, we can use auto-tune. And I was like, oh, my confidence was very shattered. I was like, can I just try it some more times? And now that I have, like, all this experience under my belt, like, I know how to play stuff in tune, and I also know how to, like, do multiple takes and to be able to be consistent with that. But it was, like, the very first time. And I'm realizing, like, what, I don't know, the technique of, like, a producer. Like, you've worked in a lot of recording studios and people that you've worked with. The producer's job, it really is, like, a lot about building up the confidence of the musician and being like, that was really great. Could we just do another one just for good measure? And, you know, that they know that it's like, that was, let's do it again. I've worked with some amazing producers. And then I also worked with Tom many years later.
He's changed a lot,
too, because he was just learning, too. So it's like, it's a skill that I never thought about. Being a producer is that you really are managing the artist and managing their performance in the studio, making them feel really comfortable. So I remember with the Painted Birds, which was your next band, we recorded at that one studio on Commercial and 18th. I forget the guy's name, but he's amazing.
Yeah,
and he was so kind, and he literally, like, he had this like wood paneled recording studio, and he lit all these candles.
Yeah,
and he said to me, he's like, oh, you're really talented, like, just do whatever you want and I'll just keep the record going. And he like let me do tons of different things and got like a really good performance. And I was like, so our recording studio that we're in here, we kind of took a little bit of that inspiration where it's like, let's cover it in like silk panels and have low lighting. And it's a really fun place to record
in. I really like these hanging things.
What would you call them, like baffles?
These hanging baffles. I could just stare at them forever.
Yeah, we upholstered them with really nice silk.
Yeah, we're not blowing smoke. It's actually very beautiful.
It's really great.
Like, we really like being in here.
Anyway, just to kind of coax a little more loosey-goosey, like...
Yeah, well, that's it, right? And I've heard that from so many. And I think there's some producers who I've worked with since then who don't get that. That it's not about your ideas, you know, when it comes to, like, production mix and all this kind of stuff. Although those are very important. It's like, you really have to cultivate comfort or the best environment for that artist to give you the best performance.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, that was... I mean, yeah, we were all so young.
I know.
We were so young. I think that was the first time I recorded.
Were we ever so young?
We were so young. We were 19, 20. That was the first time I recorded and I liked it. I remember I'd done it in high school and I was just like, I like music and I love writing music, but I hate the studio. And then that we did that and then we walked away and I was like, I actually like what we did. Like, and ever since then, it's, you know, you get used to hearing your own voice.
Yeah.
Remember like the first time you hear your voice recorded and you're just like,
ugh.
That's not me. I don't sound like that. Like, no. But you do.
Yeah.
You
do sound like that.
Yeah.
That's
what interesting.
That's
what you sound like.
Fuck, do I ever over enunciate everything I say if I'm trying to speak slowly? Because I'm a very fast talker and I'm super self-conscious about it. So when I listen to myself, I was like, God, I sound like a mom. I sound like a Midwestern mother.
Wine mom.
Wine mom. Weed mom.
Weed mom.
Yeah, I'm wine mom. She's weed mom.
Wine mom and weed mom.
We have fun.
Yeah. Oh, man. So that was, I don't know, that was a really good time. It taught me a lot, and really, it kind of opened me up to the possibilities of collaborating with people, and so from there, I wound up playing in, like, so many different bands and recording on a ton of different albums, and it was really a sincere pleasure. Thanks, Dom. And just kind of getting to know the sort of hustle of working in the music scene a little bit and mm-hmm. doing gigs and like trying to scramble for pay and like all of the grind that you have to do for like loading gear in and out, you know, at the middle of the night and starting at 2 a.m. and mm-hmm.
trying
all that
not
stuff
to piss off the sound guy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Because you know what happens if you piss off the sound
guy. Do you remember the old Marine Club? I think we played there and the stage was super rickety. So every time that you'd step in a different spot, another person would like move on the stage. So it was super like, yeah, just an unstable stage and it would bounce a lot. Right. And then the sound guy would just like set up the levels and then he went and played chess in the back bar and we'd be like, hey, could we get a little more cello in the monitor, please?
We're going to use the keyboard that we haven't been using now. Could you please turn it on?
No.
Hello?
No? Okay.
Is anybody out there? Yeah, yes. No, I totally remember that. But I remember the difference between when we, because we played that room and it was like sparsely packed that night. Mm-hmm. But when we packed it, then he was like at the board.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like everything mattered and he was like there and it was a great show and he was nice to us and blah, 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 blah.
Mm-hmm.
But I do remember those nights. I remember actually, because I'd had like two friends of mine complain to me earlier like that week about how like it really was, you know, a cross to bear that they were such good students. You know, it was hard. It was really, you know, it was really, what people don't understand that like, you know, when they got like 98% on this, like it was hard because then other people like were angry at them and it was like, it was hard that they had to like hide this to themselves and blah, 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 blah. And so I'd heard this rant and I was just like, F you guys, like get out of my, like seriously? You're complaining about like more than like privilege, like whatever. And then Gavin like gave me the same beef session like that day as we were loading out about how, you know, it's like it's really hard. Like people don't understand. It's like the hardships of being really successful and talented and like brilliant.
It is really hard.
Yeah,
like,
tell me about
so
it.
So hard.
Yeah, right.
Just ask us all.
And I just remember at one of those Marine Club shows. I think it was probably the crappier one where I just like made fun of him for it in front of the audience, like into like the mic in the middle of of the set. And I totally just like called him out for it. And like Josh, who is one of my most insensitive friends, was just like, whatever, don't worry about it. and like Gavin was so pissed. And my girlfriend at the time was like, yeah, that's
a little harsh.
Pretty mean. Like you kind of called him out like on stage and it was like kind of awkward and I don't mind awkward. I kind of like awkward on stage. It's kind of hilarious to me. But I did feel bad after.
You're a bit of an imp, a bit of a shit disturber.
Yeah. I felt bad. I did feel bad for that after whatever. And I thought about it. I was like, that was kind of shitty. Like we were on the same team for me to like, I could have just called him out in person behind the scenes and not done it in front of like 50 of our friends.
But it was so much funnier to.
It's so funny to look back on that time and just realize how, like, what children we really were. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, and I can remember, like, I don't mean to just come in like, let me just make this about myself for a second.
No,
but
this is a conversation, Kate.
But I was very just.
That's more tea.
Yeah, more tea.
A lot of my.
Okay.
Like, adolescence and early adulthood as a adjacent person in a lot of ways. Like I would tag along, end up like hanging out with bands and like just wishing to hell that I could be in one or something, that I had that kind of talent or whatever. So, but I thought that by spending time with people who were like cool kids who were in bands and stuff, that would somehow rub off on me and like make me a cooler person. And, like, I'll show those bullies who didn't like me when I was 10 or something. Like, look at all my cool rock star friends. And that was like such an immature way of looking at social cachet and like how to actually like yourself.
Right.
So the idea that I could just like get that by hanging out with people, and it was so, I think it was a very transparent thing. Like I think people were very aware of that, and it was something that people would sort of like very gently chastise me for. And I think I got some of that from Josh for sure. Like I was definitely at something where he was saying some really nice things about some people, and I was just like, oh, what am I chapel? He's like, well, to be honest, I don't really know you or care about you. I was like, you know what? I hurt really bad at the time, and now I'm like, thank you for your honesty and for not, like, pretending to like me. Because I don't need that.
He's not honest.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Yeah. And that's totally A-okay with me now. But at the time, I think I was like, oh, no. My wounded pride. But I was like, no, it actually really made me realize, like, oh, I actually have to figure out how to like myself on my own and like not just try to get my self-satisfaction from like, oh, cool people will hang out with me. Or like, it's like saying like, if a hot guy sleeps with me, that makes me beautiful or something. And that's just such bullshit. So like you have to learn that a little bit harshly. And so like, it's great. And now I know that I don't actually want to be in a band. So it's perfect. Yeah, no, music is not my thing. It's not my talent. So I do my own thing.
Yeah. Well.
Yeah.
Not to say that you're not, I don't know, I like your singing voice.
Oh, thank you. Yeah. But it's not something that I do, like, for money.
Yeah. I have some interesting feelings about music and doing it for a living or as a job. Because, like, I definitely don't ever want to do that. And
I can't blame you.
Like, and it's
like, only a fucking idiot would do that.
Yeah, exactly right. What kind of stupid moronic
What kind of
buffoon?
Stupid idiot person who's sitting here 6'7" and...
Yeah.
I just, watching you hustle really did illuminate that, and with the Painted Birds, too. I remember you, because Spark That Screams broke up, I guess, or, like, we went on hiatus, you went to Germany and traveled, you came back, you're like, I want to go in a different direction, and everyone kind of decided to change it up a little bit, and we were all going to be in the same band, and then you guys, like, with, like, Sean and Josh, it's like, okay, now we need to sit down and, like, map out our 5-year plan. It was very smart and very sensible about, like, what do we want to do? What kind of promo are we going to do? What kind of tours do we want to do? When are we going to record? Like, and it really was like, you know, Chris, get your shit together and, like, what? And I was like, I don't like any of this. And so I was like, bye.
Yeah.
And
that was such an amazing time. I think, like, you know, like, you were kind of saying, Katie, about, like, that time in your life, 21, 22, and like, I sized it up just, like, we have this, like, feeling of inadequacy, or, like, we have,
God.
You know what I mean? Like, and we were looking for validation or whatever it is, and I remember that at that time, it was very much, like, yes, we were, like, I think we were, like, being trying to be as professional as possible, but at the same time, I wasn't really sure what I needed to do, like, and I wasn't very trusting of my own gut instinct, was when I really should have been doing, as opposed to just, like, listening to, like, well, this person says I should do this, so I need to do this, and this person says I need to do this, and I need to do these things.
Yeah, I remember you were talking about, like, we need to, like, script our onstage banter. Do you remember that? Where it's like, because we really want to put together a polished show that delivers something really good, and it just rubbed me the wrong way.
Totally.
And, like, looking back on it now, I'm just like, like, in other bands that I've been in, we sort of had bits that we kind of would go back to and banter around songs and stuff, so I'm like, it kind of did work. Well, but just, like, that sort of, I was like, this is phony.
Right.
This is bullshit. I'm an
phonies.
Artist. I'm gonna go do my own thing. And then, like, didn't, really.
Yeah.
So, it was just such a weird time. But just, like, that whole hustle of, like, let's plan tours, let's, you know, work on all of our promo, let's get a publicist, let's do all of this. It never appealed to me. I felt like it was going to take some of the joy and authenticity and enjoyment out of playing music. Yeah. So I don't know if you felt or feel that way at all, because you hustle hard on your music.
I think what happened to me is, like, through my teenage years, it was always, like, this dream. I really wanted to do this. We started Spark the Screams, and I really wanted to play music professionally and be famous or whatever the hell I wanted. But I was always like, but if I make it my career, it's not going to be fun. It's just a pipe dream. It's so impossible. It's just a pipe dream. And I went away to Germany, and I read a book called The Alchemist, and it, like, basically, the way I interpreted it.
By Paulo Coelho.
Paulo Coelho.
Yes.
Paulo, which I think his writing is beautiful.
It's beautiful.
Yeah. But the takeaway I got from it was, like, the dream that you've had all along, like, that dream that you're like, I really want to do that, but that's the dream that you're supposed to be following, so, like, stop second guessing yourself and just follow it. So I came back from Germany, I was like, no, I'm going to do this. And I mean, like, it doesn't take away what I thought it would take away. If you know that, like, there's still great joy in writing. I still have joy in performing, and you know, I think when we were in Spark That Screams, it was very arty and, like, not inaccessible, but, like, it wasn't about being accessible, it was about being cathartic, or it was about being, like, mind-bending and all that kind of stuff. And Painted Birds kind of moved in this pop direction, and I've had projects that are more pop, and this my new project right now is a bit more like kind of like a Spark That Screams throwback, and, like, it's electronic elements, and it's, like, not needing to be pop and choruses and all that kind of stuff. So, but I mean, like, there are times when I, like, really hate what I do, and I really hate like the game or whatever it is. But I still always come around to thinking it's pretty great.
And like you don't want to be doing anything else necessarily.
Yeah.
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 It's a hard leap to make. I'm just such a like I want to have like a solid footing for everything, and to me to do art as like a full time thing is really scary because it's like I don't want to give up a solid paycheck to like cover my bills. I really like paychecks. Having yeah, I like having I like having like good other work that I do, and then the music is like a beautiful sprinkling on top, and I get to go off on little adventures and I get to play shows around town, but not that often kind of thing. And so I feel like that's a good place for me, and I've come to terms with it, because for a while I was like having like huge FOMO, like fear of missing out, where it's like, oh, if I had only quit my job and followed Shauna to Toronto, you know, we could have been playing all the time. And she like composes now for like, and her songs are on TV. It's our friend Adeline, who's super talented and wonderful. And I was like kicking myself for not just dropping everything and following her, or like getting involved with another, like the cool pop string quartets that are in town, you know, but it's like, I just kind of did my own thing instead. And I felt guilty about that a little bit, or like a little insecure, like, oh, I made the wrong choice. I made the safe choice. But now that I've come to know myself so much better, I'm like, no, it was the right choice for me. That's the instinct of like being really averse to that lifestyle of like hustling in the music and entertainment industry. It's like, so instead I'm going to hustle in the like social justice world instead, apparently.
Yeah, I think the hustle is really the most satisfying.
Yeah.
Really.
Yeah. But I think it's also, I think it's good to be able to acknowledge that you like the sort of more balanced life. Like, it's not, I think some people might say it's selling out, you know, but you don't, nobody has to just do one thing with their whole ass, you know, like the idea that that is the right thing to do, that's the honorable thing to do, is like a very, far be it for me to dig too deep into my own educational background, but it's like a pretty masculine idea that you have like one thing that you're supposed to do, and that's the thing you do, and that's like what makes you amazing and stuff. And like, I feel like kind of like, so like the socialization that I got as a wee little baby girl, that I don't know what the fuck accent that was. It's not anything.
A wee baby
Seamus, you know, like just a tiny little baby.
Yes,
but that like the idea that you can't just do one thing, like if you do one thing, then you're not giving any time to other things that might need you or whatever. So it's just a little bit of a different. So I think to be able to think like, okay, no, I actually do need to have this sort of baseline where I go to work a certain number of days a week and I get that basic paycheck and I can still do that. You're still making good art, you know, like just because you're not giving your whole self to it doesn't mean that it's not going to be good.
Yeah.
And it doesn't mean that like partial effort isn't worthwhile.
And I find that, like, the I really crave structure a lot.
Oh, yeah.
So having the structure of, like, going to work and having to show up, like, at a certain time, like, it actually helps my creativity more. Because then it's, like, then I have, once I'm done work, that's a really solid boundary. And now I'm, like, now it's playtime. And all day at work, you know, I've been having little things pop into my head. Now that I've started writing my own songs, it's been about 3 years. And, like, I kind of opened up that channel. I like getting esoteric about that kind of stuff, but it does feel like I popped open like a cork in my head, and now songs come in a lot, and so I'm just like just jotting stuff down all day, and then I get home and I can like play on the piano and write stuff. I feel like if I was just left to my own devices to like be purely creative and just write, I would just dick around on the internet and you know, find other ways
to. I completely agree with you.
I love dicking around.
Yeah.
It's so great.
Yeah.
No, I'm not even being euphemistic. I am being euphemistic because it's just dicking around.
Yeah.
It's the best.
No, I definitely feel either, like, because I work, you know, I work with kids 2 days a week right now. Sometimes it's 4 days of the week. But it's like the days that I have work, or like if I know that I have less time to be creative, to write, to book whatever I'm doing in my musical set, then the more I'm like, no, I have an hour before work and I have 3 hours this night and I have two, you know, and you're like, okay, it's go time. I have six from 6 until 8 and then I gotta go.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas.
Do you want some tea?
No, I'd really like some wine. Oh. I know I said that I didn't, but now I do.
Yeah, I thought you would. But
what accent was that?
I thought you would. I don't know.
Well, we're very good at voice work.
I don't know.
Who's this character? What's their backstory?
He's Serge.
Serge. Serge or Sarge?
Whichever. I don't know. But anyways, to get back to the serious matter, I'm just saying, I just find when I do have another thing sort of to ping pong back and forth between, then I'm way more creative. I'm way more like the structure helps me with my productivity.
And then are you still doing like the hustle in terms of like booking gigs, booking tours, doing all of that? So that's another thing that like it's annoying. It's maybe hindering to creativity, or does that give you the balance between like, okay, I got to spend the morning, you know, just booking shit, sending emails, like, or do you just hate it? I hate it.
Booking? I don't hate booking as much as I know a lot of my musician friends hate it. Like everybody who they're like, "Oh my god, I can't do it. I hate it." I've done about 5 tours now and it sucks. It's like nobody wants to be booking a tour. Nobody like.
But it is kind of fun when you're like, I can imagine all the places I'll go, especially when you tour Europe.
And it's fun when you have like this calendar and you're just like your dates are filling in and like you have a calendar that went from white to green to red, because I do this thing where it's like white is nothing and then green is like, okay, we're talking potential, and then red is booked, so it's like coloring it in Christmas. filling in the blanks like that is like, and then sending it to your tour mates being like, I booked it, is this thing falling? I feel like it's falling, am I tripping out? No, it's not, it's
the
fine
microphone?
No, it's fine.
Okay.
Don't trip out.
Tripping out, man. No, you tripping. Slipping my wine.
I did put a lot of mushrooms in that tea.
That'd be so great. Oh, imagine.
What if that would be... Okay, no.
Should we do a mushrooms podcast?
No, that sounds really obnoxious. But just we dose our guests before they come in.
Oh, wow. That is super illegal.
But you wouldn't get really high until the thing ended, I think.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, right as the podcast ended, you'd be like, oh...
Oh, and I can see accents and colors and times and... Yeah, probably a bad idea, but might be an idea. I don't know.
I feel like it would be... Maybe we do it and then don't release it if it's terrible, because I just feel like that is probably really obnoxious.
Oh, yeah. Perhaps it's problematic for our careers, but...
Yeah, and already, like, we've had a lot of stories on here where we talk, and then I got so high and I did this, and I'm like, those are kind of boring stories.
They're great when you're 20 or you're 21 or 22
and so
or whatever, but now.
I like recounting them as nostalgia to be like, oh, the fun we had with our mind-altering substances and our adventures, you know. That was fun.
The time you were on acid and ran into some raccoons.
Yeah.
You know, as you do.
Acid and raccoons.
Those were the days.
Oh, my Lord. So, in terms of touring and stuff like that, and just in general playing music, I wanted to kind of look into the being a solo musician versus being in a band. What do you... Because you've done so many different things, and even as a solo musician, you usually have a band with you.
In Vancouver, I do.
Right.
When I tour solo, I tour solo, just because it's, you know... I've toured with a band where I'm paying them all, but at the end of it, you just end up out so much money.
Mm-hmm.
When, you know, sometimes you're going to a new city that you've never been to before, you're going to be playing between 25 to maybe 60 people, which is a great show in like any given room, like in a room,
like an intimate
what I mean, but like do I need to be paying a band to be losing a whole bunch of money to be playing to these 40 to 60 people or whatever, right? So a lot of times I tour is just completely solo, and I did my first like solo tour down the coast last year. It was my first time in the States, and it was like a lot of like 9 or 10 hour drives by myself.
Oh.
And I thought to myself, like, how am I going to drive for 8 hours from, you know, Portland to Sacramento tonight? Like, I don't have to play a show, but like, how am I going to make it like 8 hours by myself? But like, you just do it, you know? I would just get out of the car. Like, there's so many rest stops. Like, they have way more than us, I think.
Oh,
like,
God,
like,
I love driving
so much
in
better.
The States.
Oh,
so much
there's
better.
Always,
so great.
There's always Christians with coffee everywhere. And
so
like...
many Christian radio stations. I remember going through Oregon just being like, Christian, country, country, Christian radio. Country, like, well, everything is Christian or country. Well,
I think Eugene is like the is it Bend that it has the most churches per capita in America?
Could be.
I think it must be Bend because Eugene is like a little hippie holdout still.
Right. Yeah. I can't remember which one I'm thinking of. Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's a, like a county in there that just has more churches per person than you could ever need.
Mm. Yeah, so, we have too many churches.
Like, everybody
here
just assumes Oregon is just Portland or that Washington is just Seattle, but like you go to Spokane and it's like. Like they're like, hey, have you heard of our Western racism? Like, we've got some good West Coast racism here.
Yeah.
It's weird. Mm. Rural urban.
Yeah. Oh, man. But yeah, this tour. Sorry, I had all these thoughts come to mind about Great. The States and America. But I, yeah, like, in regards to that, we was like, so I did this tour, and on the way back, my last stop was in Olympia, and it was at this little tiny, I don't even know what it was, but, like, there was, like, four artists booked, and we were all kind of like, what is this? Because, like, we weren't in Olympia, like, we were all following, like, our Google Maps, and it was, like, leading us out of town, and you're like,
so suspicious.
You know what I mean? You turn down this like dirt road into the forest,
Yikes.
And like you see a sign on cardboard that's like, "Don't worry, like you're
going
almost
the right way.
There. You're almost at the such and such house, Yikes. The such and such manor. I forget manor. I shouldn't trash it. But anyways, we get there, and this is like, hey, he was really funny to me because he looked a lot like our friend Ari Laser.
Oh, yeah.
He had, like, this long hair. And he came up to the, like, I just, like, I get there and I'm like, I'm looking at my phone, like, I'm here. Okay. And then all of a sudden I hear this, like, knock on my window, and there's 50 to 55 to 65 year old Ari Laser just like, hi. are you a musician? And I'm like, yeah. And he's like, oh, good. You can park closer around the back. I don't know how many people are coming tonight, but we're gonna have a show and the music will go on. But I don't really know. We haven't got any press and it's been really hard to promote this show. So I'm like, yeah. I've heard it all before. Like, I got here and nobody really knew that they were playing. Cool, whatever. So mm-hmm. I show up and. And, it, like, I say it's a halfway house because there's just a lot of young people who are, like, who seem to be kind of, like, edgy. And I didn't really understand how they all came together in this manner. But I was like, okay. And I'm talking to, like, the other musicians who've all mm-hmm. shown up and who are all kind of like, where the hell are we? And I'm like, I say to somebody, I'm like, I think this is, like, a halfway house. And they're like, yeah, I think it is.
Huh.
So there's some like, hicks having a bonfire in the backyard, drinking whiskey out of a jar. And we go and we sound check. And, of course, we're playing in his, like, garage that has been, like, covered in foam. So it's, like, soundproofed and, like, covered in, like, you know, blankets everywhere.
Sarongs.
It's very vibe. It would have been awesome had it been, like, packed. And we're all sitting there because it's Olympia. We're like, I wonder if Nirvana played here, you know, like that kind of like, I wonder, I don't think so, but imagine if they did.
Kathleen Hanna was here, scrawled into the floor.
Yeah, they would have played here. I'm sure they would have played here. But there was this guy, and he was like young, somewhere between like 20 and 26 years old, and like loud, shirt off, and he just had this like giant belt buckle, huge cock. No, he had this giant belt buckle. That was a Confederate flag.
Uh-oh.
On it, and like everybody was really uneasy about this guy who was just smoking cigarettes and swearing, and he was the one drinking like whiskey out of a like freaking, I don't know, moonshine or some guy.
But like out of a jar, not like a cute little mason jar.
No. Like where did
with three X's on
yeah,
it?
Yeah, exactly. like duct tape and like but yeah, you're like, this is. But so anyways, we're all like, you know, passing the bong around the fire. And finally I'm like, can I ask you something? He's like, yeah, sure. I'm like, well, like, what does that mean to you? And like, everybody got like super tense. And I'm just like, well, like, let's hear this guy out. And we had the best conversation about it. About like, basically he just was like, it doesn't mean to me. He's like, I love black people. I think gays are, like, great. Like, this Confederate, it does, like, everybody. He's like, I'm wearing this to educate people that this flag doesn't mean we want slaves. This flag to me means, like, because he's from the South, he's like, this flag means, like, we want to govern ourselves. And he just basically went on to explain to me, like, the whole, you know, North versus South Civil War, like, it's all. You know, like, this is it's propaganda. Like, the whole war happened because of slaves. No, it didn't. Like, this is his take on it. It's like, it didn't happen because of slaves.
And he's saying this to you.
Yeah, he's saying it to me. He's like, it didn't happen because of slaves. It happened because we didn't want them to come in and tell us what that they, like, we had to do this. So we wanted to govern ourselves. We wanted them to, like, be like, you want your own president? You can have your own president. We'll have our own president. Thank you very much.
And a president that's totally fine with slavery, though. That's also...
Well, but I mean, like, it, to his point, like, the yeah. North had plenty of slaves at the time, too. Oh, they yeah. were just like, get this out so that we can push our agenda of, like, unification and all this kind of stuff.
I don't doubt that it is much more complicated than just that, yeah. but...
Was he aware that you are not a white man?
I don't really know, but I don't really know what he thought. But like, I did, like, after talking to him, I was like really glad that I asked him, because like after that, I was like, oh, I'm very comfortable with you and your opinions and whatever.
Even if they're bad opinions, they don't feel dangerous.
Kind yeah, of. Like I didn't, but like I had this idea in my mind of him as a person before this, and I was like, huh, I was kind of being prejudiced to you before this bill, which might be justified because like. I mean, it is a Confederate flag, but I felt the yeah. I don't know. Makes me think differently, especially because like right after that, the whole outlawing of the Confederate flag went mm-hmm. down last summer, right?
And yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah. Well, I really do like that kind of thing where you go to new places and you ask just out of curiosity, not necessarily yeah. with judgment. Even though you, like, because we all judge everything all the time,
totally.
But to just be able to go up into a new situation and be like, hey. What does that mean to you?
Right.
I'm just really curious. And people can tell if you're genuine right. about it. And obviously you were. You were just like, I really am fascinated with this. Tell me what it means to you. Sometimes you get some really cool answers.
Yeah.
That's in our work doing mental health work, that comes up a lot.
Totally.
Where it's just like folks that maybe are acting a certain way that wouldn't be acceptable in certain situations or whatever. Mm. And you just ask them like, hey, what's going on with you today? Or... what happened, or tell me a story from your past or something, that you get some really fucking cool answers
mm-hmm.
that come out of it. So, yeah.
Well. Yeah. But, yeah.
So, touring by yourself.
Touring by myself.
It was, you get to get into those kinds of situations.
Yeah, and you don't really, like, I feel like when you're touring with a group, like a band or, you know, co-artists, you know, you're co-headlining, mm-hmm. you can kind of always, like, hide with each other mm-hmm. or, like, hang out with each other, whereas, like, solo, yeah. it's just, like, you get there and...
You either gotta assimilate or be completely by yourself.
Yeah, exactly. So you just end up meeting really random, funky people. I just had like a couple. The experiences were just very hilarious and across the like all over the place.
Just purely from like an emotional and social perspective, do you prefer traveling with a band or by yourself, like to do music? Like, what's better for you, like in terms of not even playing the shows, but like just
the
in between
aspect?
Shit.
Yeah. It really depends on the people.
Mm. Oh boy, yeah.
Yeah, like I mean, like there are people who like the Folk Road Show, I love them dearly, but like. Sometimes they can be some of the hardest people to tour with.
Yeah.
I stay with them because I think there's like a magic synthesis between the four of us that's really like it's kind of spark that screamsy and that like mm-hmm. it just feels really raw and
right.
fun and but like actually like traveling with them one of us is, you know, he's like the drunken cowboy who just wants to like go out and fuck everything. Then there's like the hermit poet who just could read all day long and smoke cigarettes and not talk to anybody, and then Peter is like, you know, he's on the spectrum, and like, you know, you can't like really, you know, you can't like really like reason with him why it's not a good, you know, like why, oh, here's why we can't wear sweatpants on stage today, Peter, and it's like a fucking like it's so such a hard conversation to have all the time, and you're just like. Because we're professionals and we can't wear the same shitty sweatpants for the third day in a row on stage again. Like, I don't know why. I think it's dumb too, but you're going to have to change your clothes because you look like a schlep.
A schlep.
You know, like, so.
Schmeal.
But then, like, you know, the brotherhood and the fun that comes out of that is amazing. And you have, you know, you have people to, like, lean on.
Mm-hmm.
And. Traveling alone can be a lot, just like in your like
oh yeah, in your
own
brain
head and yeah.
Yeah, you at least have some people that you can commiserate with too about like, wasn't that a weird experience that we all
totally.
Just had? You saw that too, right? Okay,
totally.
Cool. Not just me.
Oh man, yeah. There's been so many times in my life like I never toured long or very much, but like there's been so many things where I was like, did I imagine that? Like, did that actually happen? And then I have to like call up Nick or something and be like, hey. Did I just invent that memory? Like, no, that definitely...
Right.
Yeah, you took your pants off and rode on the back of that motorcycle. I was like, oh, did I wear a helmet? You did not.
You definitely didn't.
Oh, goodness gracious.
Oh, I've had some time.
You've lived some lives.
I've lived some lives. Not as many as touring, some people here, but...
Touring alone, I think it'd be kind of like... Like, I've always wanted to do, like, a silence retreat or, like, a meditation.
Vipassana?
Yeah, you know what I mean? Like, that kind of thing.
10-day silent meditation.
10-day, yeah, that kind of thing. I think it's kind of along those lines where it'd be, like, really great for, you know, maybe your character or your inner peace or just, like...
But it's
learning about yourself.
Miserable as you're doing.
But like, yeah, like you get to the end and you're ready. You're ready to tour with people.
Yeah.
You know.
Oh yeah.
I think that's kind of like it's great, but it's not like this is it's not sustainable.
Mm-hmm.
That being said, I'm like pondering buying a van and just like getting rid of my apartment and just just like going.
Well, then this episode is going to be really similar to our to our last one.
Yeah,
probably.
Maris is selling her van. You could buy her van. It's all decked out with a full living really? Situation.
Huh. Yeah. Oh, you had Maris.
Maris.
Great.
Yeah.
As opposed to the other Maris?
Maris. I don't know any other Maris.
Niles' wife.
From yeah.
Fraser.
Yeah,
we never see. She's got an underbite like a barracuda. That's the only thing I remember about that dumb show.
Underbite like a barracuda. Yeah.
It's a fetching little underbite, according to Niles.
Oh, very sweet. Like a cute little Shih Tzu or whatever.
Yes, exactly. Just like a cute little Shih Tzu.
Oh man, we are sweating buckets.
Yeah,
again.
Why are we sweating so much? We're upstairs.
It's so hot.
And I sweat everywhere. I have a sweating disease.
It's starting to be warmer out too. So why don't we take a little break
yeah.
and air out the studio a little
sure.
bit? And
great.
Yeah,
great.
Cool. We'll be right back.
Great.
And we're back.
Are we back? Is
yeah,
it on?
Sure.
We're back. Yeah.
Yeah, we can be back.
Back.
You hit record already?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, okay.
But I always started at the point where, so
all the secrets
that you divulge that I have on tape, I'm just going to save for later.
Thank you, yeah.
So I'm just adding.
Smear campaign later on.
I'm adding to your blackmail file. I gave you some photos. So when we did our episode with Aaron, we went through our photo albums to like look at our teen goth selves. And I found some pictures of you from a pirate party where you're wearing some leather pants that were mine.
Pants.
And so for context, I'm 5'0" and Dom is 6'11".
6'7".
I thought you were 6'8".
When he has bigger hair.
You thought wrong.
Yeah.
It's like that's such a fucking Madeline Kahn thing, like, I'm 6'8", ma'am. Forget about the 6 feet, tell me about the 8 inches. You've seen Blazing Saddles, right?
I haven't seen it.
Oh my god.
It's definitely I need to.
Yeah, leave for 90 minutes, watch it, and come back, and then we'll reconvene.
You know what I just watched the other night, though?
What's that?
This should have updated. I watched The Labyrinth for the first time.
Oh.
Yeah. Sorry, I got really excited.
Yeah.
The first time.
I watched David Bowie's Package, like, all Friday night.
It's pretty good.
It's pretty amazing.
Yeah, that's quite
although
the
somebody noted, they're like, did you notice that his package, like, changed throughout the movie? Like, at the beginning, it's like, dick, balls. Like, you can, like, see, like, so much definition, then all of a sudden it just kind of, like, slowly just becomes, like, just a mound. Like
someone in wardrobe was like, we gotta get him a codpiece. This is obscene.
Yeah, like, we're counting the hairs on his testicles. Like, maybe we should just, like, cushion that up a bit.
Two ball hairs on the David Bowie. Why did that become Italian?
Don't sully the count with your disgusting ball hair joke.
Just become Italian. What? But yeah, great movie, although definitely one of those...
Is it though? Is it a great movie? I love it more than anything, but it's not very good.
Well, it is what it is, though. Like, I mean, maybe that counters the whole it's a great movie. But no, I think for a kind of scary adolescent, movie, like, it kind of, like, takes you to a new fantastic world. It's great.
Where David Bowie is slightly sexually menacing, and you kind of like it, but you're not sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And the puppet work is just so, like, insane.
It's good.
Yeah.
I got some tidbits for you if you're interested.
Yeah.
Because, you know, I got the trivs.
Yeah, of course.
Got the trivias.
I always called you. Katie Susie Trivs.
That's what they call me.
Katie Susie Trivs.
Katie Susie Trivs.
That's what they've always called me. That's definitely my nickname. 100% of the time, it's always been it.
Susie Trivs.
So all the dancing in that film is choreographed by Gates McFadden, who is Dr. Beverly Crusher on Star Trek: The Next Generation.
Oh shit!
So she is. Yeah, she was a very popular choreographer.
Choreographer. No, you're
thank
totally
you.
Right. Yeah.
And one of the puppeteers who did the Fieries, you know, the with the creepy, they pull their heads off and they're like throwing them around and it's like sort of vaguely, I don't know, dance hallish. It's like a little bit Jamaican sounding. One of the puppeteers is cat from what do you call it? Red Dwarf.
Ah, Danny.
Yeah, Danny John Jules.
Okay.
Yeah. It's cool shit.
My hair is nice. My clothes are nice. I'm looking nice. Yeah.
I love. Oh my God, I love Red Dwarf.
Me too.
I was very attracted to Lister.
Me too.
Oh, thank God, I'm not alone.
Oh, the ultimate dirtbag fantasy.
Oh, totally.
And he's the last man on the universe, and so you gotta fuck him.
You gotta.
I'm
you gotta.
So
you can't.
Right
what
now.
Can you
did
do
you
with like a
British
a biracial?
Fiction?
No, I know the show Red Dwarf.
We don't
I,
like
I never,
those,
I,
do
I never
we?
Really. Well, I never really got into Red Dwarf, though, mm-hmm. unfortunately. But yeah. I know of it.
Yes, the main character is just like a dirtbag human who like drinks. He like only has two remaining taste buds or something, and so he only eats the spiciest food. He drinks beer milkshakes all the time.
Right.
He's just like he clips his toenails at dinner. He's got like weird dreadlocks. Like I don't know, but there's something just super hot in his Liverpudlian
really
accent.
He's really hot.
So hot.
Really hot.
Super hot. He kind of looks like a cross between Jordan Peele and you, actually. So.
I'll have to start clipping my toenails at the dinner table more often.
Don't. You know? Well, I mean, that's not going to be a problem for me, because I don't usually eat dinner with you.
Yes. Any of your current friends or roommates would probably not enjoy that very much.
I'll just wait until they reject the idea.
Mm-hmm. So you watched Labyrinth for the first time.
I watched Labyrinth for the first time. Mm. Yeah.
Wow, it's the
did you have did you have 30s. Your teenage girl sexual awakening this weekend then?
Was I did, yeah. No, great. I didn't know.
Good.
Is it?
Yeah, it feels
is
great.
Is that the awakening for a lot of people? Is
oh
the
God!
Labyrinth?
Well, I saw that when I was 13. So,
but is it David Bowie who's
oh,
like
God.
Awakening you?
Fuck. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, a little bit. Okay, honestly, a little bit Jennifer Connelly too.
Oh,
but
yeah,
I was like
sure.
crushing that down for a long time. Mm-hmm. But yeah, definitely. She's terrible in that film. She is
she's
not a
so
good actress.
Bad.
But she's so beautiful. Like, but yeah. She was 16 and I was 13 when I was watching it, so it's not weird. Now it's weird. If I go,
is she
like,
only
oh, she's
3 years old than us?
What, no. She's much older than that. But like watching the movie, she was 16 when she made the movie, and I was
right.
13 when I was watching it. She's in her 40s, but yeah,
right, okay,
much older than us.
Well,
I think 40 is much older than us.
That's true.
Doesn't mean they're old. Just
no,
relative
no,
to
yeah,
our
yeah
experience.
Just older than us.
Just that she was 16 when I was one. So
right,
yeah.
There you go. Time
keeps on ticking.
Sexual awakening
into the future. Mm. Yeah, it's like, wouldn't it have been funny if I was like, no, it wasn't David Bowie. Was it Jennifer Connelly? No. Like that worm.
Yeah.
It was the puppets. I'm a furry.
I love Ludo and Sir Didymus.
Oh, Ludo.
It's got to be. Oh, that new movie that just came out, Zootopia. Have you seen, like, everybody that has been watching it is like, ooh, I want to be, like, a fur person. Like, oh, you're a furry now.
Yeah.
You watch Zootopia, and now you're a furry.
Did you see the sweetest... So in Vancouver, I guess a lot of Syrian refugees were being relocated to mm-hmm. live in Vancouver temporarily in a hotel. Mm-hmm. And there was also a furry convention happening at the same hotel. And so all these little Syrian children walk into the hotel and these people in their furry costumes are hanging out in the lobby. And I guess the furry con people had sent out a message before and like, hey, please be respectful, keep anything adult, you know, sort of private. And there's
no yiffing.
Yeah, there's
no wedding.
Yiffing. That's when you fuck in your fursuits.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it's yiffing. Called yiffing. Yeah. Huh?
And they were like, just, you know, so be respectful. Learned. And if anyone speaks Arabic, it would be really helpful. Can you, like, to translate things or just, like, let's make people stay very comfortable and cool.
Right.
And so all these little kids showed up in the hotel lobby with all these, like, live-action stuffed animals and had the party of a lifetime. And there's
amazing.
There's videos of, like, them all dancing in a circle, all being so cute. And the furries were super nice and respectful. And it was just like, oh, Canada.
Furries are cool people.
Yeah.
People like you and me.
I thought it was the sweetest shit. And the kids looked so happy.
Nice.
They're just like, Canada's great.
Let's just keep them innocent for a little while, right? Like, the only issue I have with furries is, like, the poor dry cleaners that get the fursuits brought to them. Like, I have to imagine that they are like, I hate my life and I hate myself.
When I danced on stage with the Flaming Lips.
Oh, God. Mm-hmm. Right. I forgot about this.
They often, so...
As you do all the time.
We'll get into the story. Hopefully we'll have Caitlin Fontana come on this podcast.
Ooh, yeah.
And it's actually her birthday today. Happy birthday,
Caitlin.
Happy birthday,
Caitlin.
Oh, it is. Yeah.
All the way in Brooklyn, New York
City. So next time
that's my most insensitive friend's ex-girlfriend.
Yeah, exactly. We're just naming everything.
Just naming the names.
There you go, dropping.
But Caitlin is wonderful. We had a good adventure where we went and see the Red Hot Chili Peppers, and we got to be on stage with the Flaming Lips, who opened for them. And their whole thing for a while was they would invite people on stage, dress them in animal costumes, and you could dance on stage with them. So we were in the back room trying on these animal costumes, and they smelled so bad. because it was really hot on stage. Like, I was sweating. I had, like, I was a mouse, and the costume was so long on me that I was, like, tripping over my own furry feet. I had the helmet on, like, the mouse helmet headpiece, and I kept it on for one song, and then I just took it off. And so it was just, like, a tiny head on a giant furry body waving a flashlight and bubbles around. It was still really fun.
Oh, yeah.
But the insides of those heads smelled really bad, and all we had to do at the end when we were finished with them was just, like, spray them out with Febreze, and you just pass them on to the next
unfortunate
soul. And it was at the end of their tour, and I remember Wayne Coyne was just like, sorry, guys.
Sorry about this.
It's been a long tour, and we're like, ew.
Was it? Yeah, well, that makes tons of sense, though. Yeah. Those lights, I mean, yeah, it's so hot on stage if you're not wearing a furry suit.
Yeah.
But was it like, I always remember that story. I've heard it so many times from you and Noelle and Josh.
It's
and
one of
Caitlin,
my best stories.
It's like, and I remember because, like, I was invited to go, but I was like, I don't really know Flaming Lips, and I don't really like the Red Hot Chili Peppers that much. And then, like, you guys all came back, and it was, like, the time of your life, and I was like, fuck, I should have gone.
But it's just sour.
Did you change up every song? Like, would you get a time, like, a lot of time that you'd be on stage with the suit, and then you'd take it off and leave? And then somebody else would put that suit on, or were you just dancing through the whole show?
Through the whole Flaming Lips set.
Okay.
Yeah, and it was just, like, pick your costume, hang out backstage, and pick your costume, and then get on stage and be up there for the whole set, and then when you're finished, put your costume back on the rack, spray it with Febreze, go back into the crowd. And we were like, sure. And then we just hid backstage and stayed there for the whole
watched
time.
Watched it from the back. Yeah.
That's awesome. A lot of
fun. Yeah. When you were talking about being like the cool kid, being near the band, I really grapple with that still these days, where I'm so used to like being in bands and having access to backstage areas or being in the green room or being able to like not have to wait in line to get in somewhere. I, like, hate being in the audience now. Do you feel that, where it's like if I go see a friend's band play, I'm just like, well, I should just be able to walk into the back. This is, like, my space, too. It's like, no, Chris, no, like, you
so
don't
you're,
get to...
So your entitlement is grown.
I feel like it is. And my impatience with, like, I have to wait in line. I don't mind paying for shows like that. Yeah. Obviously, I want to support my friends, but it's like, just let me in and...
Right.
Spectating without special privileges is pretty dull.
Yeah, I really love being involved in the show.
Once you've had them.
Oh, yeah, I agree with you. I think in regards to if I can be on stage, then yeah, I want to be on stage. But I kind of... I'm always reinforcing to myself that, like, I am not special or I'm not, like...
Oh.
You know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
I'm kind
of... that problem.
I'm always just like, no, like... I'm with the people watching this show. I'm a civilian. Like, that is where, like, I'm just like everybody else. I want to be dancing at the front for my friend's band, for Radiohead, for whoever it is I'm going to go see. I want to be like, you know, I'm like you. You were like me, that kind of thing. But it is bloody nice watching. Like, I've seen a couple shows from like side stage, and it's like, this is so much better. This is way better. Like, you see the things that, like, they turn around and say to each other. Well, you know, this is a completely different show. And you get to watch, like, I remember seeing Macklemore, who I'm not a huge fan, but I played Squamish Festival a couple years ago, and Macklemore was one of the headliners we watched from the side stage. And you get to watch the audience.
Yeah.
That was the thing. It was like watching 30,000 people, you know, singing
Pops and
Same
Babs.
Love or all that kind of stuff. And it was just like, oh, my God. God, this is the show. Like, I don't care what they're doing. Like, look at all these people on shoulder tops singing, like, you know, gay people, lesbians, everybody just like kissing and like just saying like same love. And it was just like, this is, I cried. I was like, this is amazing.
Aww,
it was great.
Nice.
Yeah. So that there's definitely.
Wow. Like, the vibe was so good that you took Macklemore seriously for a little bit.
I did. I do take him seriously, though.
He's a goof, but I don't have a problem with him as a person.
Yeah.
I don't think I have a problem with the dynamics around like race and hip hop and all that kind of stuff. But it's not really it's not my fight.
Right.
Probably.
Right.
I don't know. Like, it's not my scene.
Is he, like, when you say that you have a problem with it, like, do you mean hip hop in general?
Well, just the fact that, like, mainstream music rewards him disproportionately over, like, other hip hop musicians. Like, there's a million people who don't know who, like, Run the Jewels are, but they're like, Macklemore's the best rapper. Yeah, he's accessible. And,
yeah.
Yeah, because he's white. And then the academies are like, oh, okay, this guy's doing rap. Let's give him best rap album or whatever. Like, so he beats out, like, Kendrick Lamar and all those kind of people. But
I feel you. But I think the thing that I've learned, because I've noted from, like, my time of playing and stuff, is that, like, I've had people hate or dislike me for my fans or for like what my listeners are like, what, you know, like some, you know, and
can you elaborate
let's get
on
into
that?
This.
That's
I'm really interested.
Well, because like, I think, yeah, I think like, I think with the Painted Birds, for instance, because the Painted Birds got a little bit like a little bit college rocky, and it got a little bit, you know, it was not like our fans were Affliction or anything, but like the like we started attracting a certain ilk of people, and that in turn people would be like, well, I don't like your fans are douchebags, blah blah blah, and it kind of started turning into this like,
are they like Dave Matthews fans type?
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Kind of,
but like
hacking and sacking and there's like, salmon shorts and.
No, but, like, a bit more just, like, I think a bit more just, like, douchey. Like, we just, you know, you start attracting, like, douchebags. And then all of a sudden,
guys.
Yeah, and then all of a sudden, like, your artist friends or whatever kind of like, well, you're, like, your fans are such douchebags. They don't like your music. Or, like that. That's kind of what kind of, like, starts, and it does kind of start to happen. And I've seen that. I've been at shows where it's, like, I don't like this band because I don't like the vibe of everybody around. And you can have the opposite effect where you're, you know, you're at your favorite band. You're at a Sigur Rós show or you're at wherever the fuck you are, and you start thinking like, I just love everybody here, and I love this band, you know. And like for Macklemore, it's like he didn't give himself a Grammy.
No,
he just fucking works so hard, putting out his own music. Like him and I think his girlfriend is his manager. He like he wasn't on a label the longest time. He just CD babied it, which is like essentially self releasing all his shit. And he climbed the ladder and he busted his ass until he has like number one singles.
Right.
And yes, it's bullshit that he got.
He started on a higher rung than a lot of other people.
Yeah, it's bullshit that he gets Grammys and Eazy-E and Public Enemy never got, or whatever, never got any Grammys. Yes, it's bullshit. But like, I'm not gonna like fault him.
It's not
for
his.
It.
No, it's definitely not his fault. I mean, like, if I was hanging out with him, I'd probably be pretty nice. Like, why would I be a dick to Macklemore? What purpose would that serve? I'm generally not a dick to most people. So, be like, hey, how are you doing? Like, I wouldn't be like, I love your music, because I don't, but...
Yeah, totally.
Like, good stuff. Nice work.
Yeah.
Cool hairdo.
But is it, so, like, there's sort of a weird dynamic where it's like your music gets a little bit more mainstream. Maybe you start attracting wider audiences, more, like, mainstreamy audiences, and then your more niche artist friends are like,
Yeah, or whatever, right? Like, maybe, let's say you start, like, attracting a lot of, like, middle-aged moms. Soccer moms are, like, your fan base. And then all of a sudden it's kind of like...
If you're a Josh Groban, perhaps.
Yeah, right? Like, and maybe you're not. Like, maybe... Well, whatever, you are whatever you are, but then all of a sudden, like, Pitchfork won't write about you because you're kind of like... contemporary, and it's like there's plenty of stuff that is regarded in the same, you know, esteem, that's quite, you know, like in stylistically, but just the fact that, like, you know, it became cool for these people, and then all of a sudden it's not cool because their fan base is not cool or whatever it is, you know. And I find that very interesting, how like your parishioners can kind of like, you know, name your church or like, you know, whatever you want to call it. But I've always found that really, really interesting. But I mean, I don't really pay heed to like, I need these kind of fans. I just try and be inspired, do what I love. And
I kind of joked at the beginning of like, oh, the indie darling, Dom Frico, because it's like the local indie radio station fucking adores you.
Yeah.
You know, you get lots of radio play. You were in lots of, like, musical competitions and stuff like that. Do you feel like that kind of dynamic and being involved with that institution affected your work at all?
Do we want to name the radio station? Like, it seemed like you were being...
Not if we're going to shit talk them.
Oh, it's fine. We've already, like, name-checked everybody in this episode. Just, like, it's the Peak Radio.
They're
good. I love that station. I always enjoy listening to it. And they put on, like, contests to like, get, you know, money and notoriety and record. And, like, you go to, like, awesome workshops and stuff. Like, it's a cool opportunity. And I remember all of our friends were going through that grind for a while. But do you feel like... So I actually wrote down this question here. It's like, do you feel like you have to have, like, a certain sound, or you have to sound a certain way to sort of get popularity in those...
In that circle.
Like, in the radio or...
You have to...
I don't know. Is that a boring question? I wonder if it's affected
your shape. I
think
it's hard to answer, probably.
Yeah.
But I think you have to try anyway. You have to... Like, it's kind of like in university where you get an assignment and they're like, no, I want a 1,500-word essay. And you're like, but I could write my whole thesis on this, man. And you do, and they fail you, or they give you a really shitty mark, and they're like, yeah, but I needed you to write 1,500 words mm-hmm. on gender equality in Japanese schools, not a fucking thesis. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? So it's like, I think there's two ways. It's like, you kind of have to play the game. You kind of have to, like, not sound like everybody else, but, like, you kind of have to, like, work in their format.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And that's, we were talking about having structure around your creativity. Yeah. It's kind of like an artistic challenge to be like, oh, can I make my stuff work in this format and still be true to myself, which is kind of an exciting challenge.
You can't give them Joanna Newsom when what they want is Katy Perry or whatever.
Like, exactly. Know your audience. You always have to know your audience. If you're playing for, like, an... you know, a bunch of geriatrics in a house concert. Like, don't bring the band and rock their faces off, like, mm-hmm. because their faces will just leave.
They just really want you to do covers of, like, I don't know, Gene Autry or Smash Mouth.
Smash Mouth, exactly.
My parents love
so I think Smash I think Mouth. It's like you kind of have to just pay attention to the rules that like the unspoken rules. It's like, well, not even unspoken. It's like, we're not going to accept a 7-minute song. We don't want to hear a 7-minute song. We can't fit it in. Maybe the program director will put in, like, at 3 a.m. one Tuesday when he just needs a 7-minute slot to fill. I'll finally
put Dom's
song.
The wank slot to fill.
Yeah, I was like, I'll just put that song that Dom's been bugging about playing. I'll just play it once and I can say that I played it and fuck off. But, like, you know, but then there's also this sort of, like, side of art where, you know, like the David Bowies and the Tools and the Radioheads were, like, they're not following any rules. And they're defining cool. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like the Arcade Fires, where it's like, there's not a chorus in the song, but it's a hit.
There's 800 of you up there.
Yeah, it just works. So, like, yeah, you either have to kind of, like, play the game or just know that what you're doing will be the next thing and just...
just do that thing.
Just do it. Mm. And just be unapologetic about it. Mm. You know?
That's a good answer.
That's what I think. That wasn't a fart, by the way. I was just moving on my seat.
That sounds like what a fart, what somebody who just farted might say.
Sounds like,
you're like trying to recreate the sound to prove it.
And it's not working.
Yeah, it's not. Oh, it's raw denim. Damn it.
You and your tight raw denim
tight
jeans.
Tight raw denim.
Oh my gosh. I wonder, you are a Canadian musician. We're all Canadians here. Do you feel like any sort of particular identification with that? Or is that just by virtue of where you live? Like, or do you feel like you are a Canadian musician?
I feel like I am a Canadian musician. I think as much as anybody else is. I think there's varying degrees on, like, for the longest time, I never really felt a sense of home. Mm-hmm. Like, I lived in Salmon Arm, and I moved away from Salmon Arm, and then Salmon Arm really wasn't my home anymore, and then I'm in Vancouver, and I could move, but I definitely feel it when I tour, and I go other places, and I'm like, well, this definitely isn't my home, mm-hmm. you know, wherever I am, I'm like, I don't feel at home here, right. But I think I am Canadian, if that even is a thing.
Yeah, I guess what I'm thinking of really is that, like, you know, we have a lot of musicians and, well, like, musicians and actors and comedians and stuff who are from Canada but are not, like, of Canada in some ways. Do you know what I mean? Like, I don't think about Michael Bublé and think, like, oh, Michael Bublé is hella Canadian. Like,
right.
But then if you say the Tragically Hip.
Well, I was listening to the Tragically Hip today. I'm like, this is the most goddamn Canadian thing I've ever heard in my life. Like, I'm just, like, wiping my face with a maple leaf. Like, I don't... it's so, like, the walls hung with pictures of our parents' prime ministers, or, like, let's go to Bob Cajun, or so, like, they're just, they name drop all of these super Canadian things, but, like, I don't even know what I'm getting at, really, but there's, like, this certain, like, sense of, like, Metric feels like a very Canadian band to me, but I don't know if everybody else feels that way about them, but I don't know.
Well, it's almost like when you say Bublé, that makes, like, I, like, you say Tragically Hip. When you say Bublé, I think of, like, Bare Naked Ladies.
Mm,
and it's like,
they're a
Canadian band.
A bonus, like, Canadian.
Yeah,
gets,
you can't get much more Canadian than that. And I think, like, with things like Bublé or, like, Nelly Furtado.
I love the way you say Bublé.
Bublé.
You're really emphasizing the Bublé.
Or, like, you know, you, like, Bublé.
Bublé.
To make a really think that Bublé and Bieber should do some kind of, like, collaboration.
Bublé. So, Bublé.
Yeah, the boobs and Bublé. The beebs. but like
Justin Bubler.
You know, it's almost like the brand wise they kind of deny they're not.
Yeah.
They're whitewashed in their branding to be like, we're
beige.
We're beige, you know what I mean? Whereas, like, I don't think I'm like, I am Canadian, mm-hmm. and that is part of who I am.
Right.
You know?
Yeah, I do.
Like, I'm not a tragically hip. I'm not a bare naked ladies. Because, like, I feel like I'm a bit too, like, I hold a Swiss passport. My parents are both immigrants. Like, I'm a first generation Canadian. Mm-hmm. And I love Canada. I walk down the street every day thinking, well, like, fuck, I'm so lucky to be Canadian. Like, this is great. Especially to be American right now.
Yeah.
But, like,
yeah, things are going really well for us.
Yeah.
Wasn't for a while.
Yeah, no, right? Yeah.
But now the tables have turned.
Yeah, exactly. They're getting their
own. Now we've got a fuckable prime minister.
Yeah, we got a fuckable prime minister, and they're getting their dose of Stephen Harper-isms. But, yeah.
A demagogue with bad hair.
Wow. Yeah. I don't know.
Yeah.
Yeah, basically. Mm-hmm. But. Blech. Yeah, but I definitely feel proud to be, like, I mean, if I feel proud to be Canadian, and, yeah, it's funny, because it comes up with, like, you spell the way you spell things, like,
yeah.
Like, we have, one of our bands has a song called Favorite Mistake, and it's like, well, how are we going to spell favorite?
With a U!
And then, like, we, like, talk about the fact, like, we're fucking Canadian, it's with a U! We all, like, wrote it down, we're all, like, I think we all agreed on F-A-V-O-R-I-T-E, and we looked at it, and we were just like,
I don't like it. Looks
no,
wrong.
No.
Feels
no,
bad.
No, it needs a U in there. I don't know why, but it needs a U.
You gotta round out those vowels.
Yeah, favorite. Bublé.
Bublé.
Michael Bublé.
Robert Goulet.
I don't know how I was saying it now. Was I just
Bublé.
Bublé.
Bublé. I don't even know. It's so, because he, I never even think about him being Canadian, but I used to live, like, near Kensington in North Burnaby, and every single store in that neighborhood, like, the Chinese restaurant, the laundromat, the fucking dry cleaner, everything just has an 8x10 of Michael Bublé, that sign, it's like, my favorite laundromat, like,
yeah,
sure, Bublé.
Yeah, I'm sure you did laundry here at the public laundromat. Sure, boobs. Sure.
The boobs.
Boobs.
The
boobs.
We love them. Beebs and boobs.
The beebs and the boobs. The boobs and the beebs.
That would be a really cute name for their
boobs
tours
and boobs.
Yeah, exactly, right?
Boobs and beeps
and
boobs and beeps.
But like something cute where they're just like, they call it like the birds and the bees kind of thing.
And yeah.
The boobs and the bees and the flowers and the trees and the moon up above. And a thing called love.
I think that would be sweet, actually.
Very sweet.
Yeah. Who would be the audience? Like, what the fuck is the Venn diagram for them, I wonder?
The people who like Justin Bieber and their moms.
Oh!
They all go together.
It'd be
you do it on Mother's Day.
You know what? That's a great idea.
In the springtime?
Yeah. Wow, you are firing hot on ideas lately.
I'm feeling
good. Although I had a friend, like, because Bieber was here last weekend. I don't know if this came up in your last podcast.
I can't say that I follow.
The thing is, if I met a woman who looked like Justin Bieber, I would be on her, like, white on rice.
Yes.
But a guy that looks like Justin Bieber, I'm like, no, thanks.
Yeah.
I'm good. Just bring me a little lesbian that looks like Justin. So basically bring me Kate McKinnon doing Justin Bieber on SNL.
So hot.
And that's my whole life right there.
Oh, yeah, that's
into it.
Yeah, she's pretty cute.
Into it.
But, like, I think Bieber used to be about the 14 to 17-year-old females. You know,
sure.
Like there were 11.
Females.
Females. But, I think, yeah, like, it was, like, 10 to 17-year-old
sure.
girls,
yeah.
right? But, like, now, with this last record, like, it's so funny because, like, everybody's coming out with their, like,
I secretly like him. That story song's pretty fucking good.
It's great,
like, it's
right?
a fun tune.
I haven't listened
Skrillex,
to it at
baby.
All, but people really in my office loved it. We were, like, playing it in the outreach van, like, all kinds of stuff.
It's a great record.
Yeah.
I like good pop, like...
Yeah.
Fun pop is fun.
I struggle sometimes where I'm writing songs and they fall into, like, pop chord progressions and I'm just like, no, it's too poppy, this is... And then I'm like... But these are good.
Like, yeah. Just put a G7 diminished in. I don't know what chords are.
But like the
the
pop progression is like it's fucking solid. And like a lot of the pop songs are like this is so good. It lifts my heart.
That like is it like 6-5-3-1 or what is that chord progression?
The Pachelbel's.
Like, the canon.
Is it 6-5-3-1?
I don't know. I don't know music.
Bum, bum,
but it's just like four chords and it's so good.
Yeah.
There's that Australian band Axis of Awesome that does the four chord song. They just put all of
right.
the songs that use that exact chord progression
totally.
Together.
It's good. It's a classic.
And, like, I'm like, I like every single one of those songs. I'm manipulatable very much so when it comes to that.
And I think like there is a thing like around neuroscience and music, right, where it's like our brains carve these pathways, and if we hear the same chord progression over and over, that's going to be the most relatable and the most accessible. When you hear something new, like Tchaikovsky's Rite of Spring, it made people fucking riot. because they were like, oh, I hate this. This is terrible. I don't understand. It makes me ragey because it's just like the dissonance fucked people up because they'd never heard it before. Right. And that's the same with hearing something like, oh, I don't like that new Radiohead album. I say that about every single one, and then it grows on me after I do it three times, and I'm like, it's my favorite record. Right. Every time I think they've lost me, and then I'm like, this is the best one.
Right. No, oh, you're totally, so yeah, you're totally right.
Yeah, familiarity is the, I don't know.
Mother of... good times.
Fuck, I don't know. I wanted to say familiarity breeds contempt, but that's the opposite.
Contentment?
That's the opposite of what
familiarity
I wanted.
Familiarity breeds contentment.
Yeah, I don't know. Just people that's respond it. To it right away. Mm-hmm. And so then it's like, I've had to let that go in terms of like, you know what, I'm putting my own words and my own story over this chord progression.
A good song is a good song. You don't have to be the Joanna Newsom.
Well,
whatever.
I think too is
but she's
just
so
like,
good though.
When she you feel good. Like, you know, when you feel the flow of creativity, mm-hmm. like to all of a sudden be like, where's my, I need to put a G7 diminished. You know what I mean? Like it's kind of just like putting a roadblock, mm-hmm. like just like being like poof, wall in front of what you're doing and be like, oh, and then you stop. But like, if you're just going 1-4, 1-4, 1-5, one, or whatever it is, yeah. like, and it feels right, like,
do it.
Just do it. Like, it's speaking to your soul and your being and your heart and everything. Like, you're supposed to be following that. Mm-hmm. Like, we don't have room for pretension right now. With that, you know what I mean? Pretentiousness.
It's quite
right
a
now.
Small room and it's very warm.
Yeah. So. You know what I mean? Like, I think that's the big difference of me at 32 to me at, like, 1920. Is mm-hmm. like, 1920, I had all this, like, is that cool? I don't know. Is that that's too much. That's too pop. That's too much. Oh, we're singing. I don't want to sing about love. I don't want to do anything like the mainstream is doing. And now I'm kind of like, well,
what other song is there to write?
Yeah, well,
but what about love?
What about? But like, yeah. But I think it's just kind of like if it's flowing through you, just let it flow, and that's what feels good.
Mm-hmm. If it feels good, do it, even if you shouldn't. We open for Sloan. Did I mention that?
I was like, I feel like this is a lyric I don't.
Just wanted to put that right back in there.
Didn't I mention that?
Did I mention
they
that?
Were,
did we open for Sloan?
We did, at like this big festival, right? And then it's like, I was hoping that we would get to meet them, and we hung out backstage like all day, and it was like raining. Big, like, it was a UBC, like, right. you know, Frosh Week, whatever. Sloan fucking walks off their tour bus onto stage, plays a set, walks right back onto their tour bus. They didn't say a word to anybody else. Really? I was like, wow, that's cool. But, like, also, I'm like, hey.
Who did we meet that day, though? We also played with, like,
anything else
Limb
from that
Lifter,
show.
And I feel like played with...
Oh, yeah, Limb Lifter. Did we play with
that Ryan? Ryan Dahl is in the Mounties
he's
now.
He's very nice.
He seems like a sweetie pie.
I don't know. You're like, he's a really, dick.
No, I don't know.
He ate my beans.
I haven't. He ate my fucking lima beans. Such a dick.
You don't notice, Ryan. I'm going to call up Hoxley work
you,
me and
Ryan.
Get him to yell at you.
Yeah.
Oh, God. I love the Mounties. Oh, my God.
They're
so
fun.
Much.
But I feel like my Wide Mouth Mason was also on that bill. Were they?
I don't think so.
They must have been.
I think Mark would have freaked out about that.
Yeah, no, it was that band Pilot was on. Yeah, is that Pilot?
I love it. Dom's touching me right now.
Pilot was on the same bill.
Who's
though.
Pilot?
Like P-I-L-A-T-E?
Yeah. And now and then they changed. Yeah, and then they changed to Pilot Speed, and they spelled it like P-I-L-O-T Speed.
Hmm. Wow, they just want to fuck you up, I guess.
Hmm.
But they were big in like when we were in like second university. But they had a song that was like it sounded like High and Dry. Hmm. Like it was like. This sounds like a Canadian version of High and Dry.
Don't leave me pie. Yeah. Don't leave me nut.
Yeah.
Yeah, basically.
That was basically it.
Yeah.
But they were in it. And I remember, yeah, that's why we met them.
Right. I just remember feeling so cool to be like, we opened for them. It's like we were on at 3 and everyone else was on at 10. Like,
yeah, and it was raining and...
But the fans were there.
It's
we
exciting
too,
when you
big.
Get to... You
get to I had my Tori Amos hair at that time. That was really Ooh. Fun. It was like super long and I henned it, so it was like bright orange. And I would like
shake it around. I remember
you
hennaing your hair.
Yeah.
You're like grating the henna into like a bucket to make your hair like
and then
slightly
I'd, like,
red.
And then I'd like twist it all into like mud dreadlocks and sit on the porch. Or I'd do it down at Wreck Beach. Okay. So I would take my henna paste to Wreck Beach, get totally nude, put the henna in my hair, twist it all up into like a big pile on top of my head and just sit there and like suntan. Because apparently if like the sun is hitting you on the henna, it, like, bakes the clay onto you, and it, like, enhances the color, and then I, like, wash the henna out in the ocean.
In the ocean.
Isn't that so fucking insufferable?
It's pure, man. It's pure.
You know what I dreamed? I found a drawing. We were talking about rave books the other day on another episode, and what I planned for when I went to Burning Man, which turned out to be terrible...
Because it's Burning Man.
I wanted to get... This is, like, me being, like, a young white girl that, like, didn't know any better. I was like, I'm going to get 4 dreadlock extensions, like, the way that, like, you know, ravers, you would put in your weird synthetic dreadlocks, and they'll hang down my back, and I'll wear no top, and I have a cello tattoo on my back, and I'm like, the dreadlocks will be, like, the strings, and I'll, like, walk around. Isn't that so gross?
I love that you're telling us this, though.
Yeah, when was this?
That was, like, 2006.
Okay, okay. That's, like, 10 years ago. I thought, like, because I know a lot, well, most of my friends have gone to, like, Burning Man in the last 4 years.
Oh, yeah, no, I haven't gone, I only went the one time, but I thought that would be, like, the fucking hottest thing to be, like, with my either, like, backless shirt or just no shirt and then just my dreadlocks hanging down the back.
Don't give up hope. Just don't.
What I want to do is design a dress that has a piece of jewelry that actually has 4 strands of really thin filamenty silver that hangs down the back.
That'd be cool.
That backless sounds dress.
That sounds really sexy.
Yeah.
Fucking dreadlocks, like,
yeah, that besides
it being disgusting, look problematic, and whatever, it just also looks so bad.
Yeah, white people dreadlocks never look good. Black people dreadlocks almost always look good. Too many white people with dreads.
Ugh.
Bad times. Bad times. So, we're moving on.
That was a lot of an overshare. I just remembered that. I was just like, oh, that's so sexy.
I love that overshare.
It was really good. I like it when somebody tells, like, a story bashfully. They're like, I hate myself for this, but let's just put it out there. That's, like, my favorite story because it's an equalizer. We're like, we're all garbage, but we're all beautiful garbage.
Yeah. I'm sure I would have had a fun time if I had really dug into that look, but then I gained some self-awareness.
Right.
Just probably for the best. I was thinking, because we're getting kind of coming to the end of our time here. Do we want to finish off with, like, some superlatives, maybe? Like, what are, like, some weird tour stories? Like, what's the weirdest thing someone said to you on tour? Like, given you something?
Yeah.
Or, like, have you ever had a creepy fan experience or
something? My question that I wanted to lead with was, Dom, what's it like being handsome and charming and talented? do fans
see, if you would open up with that, I don't know. I don't, but now, at this point, you've
this is
greased,
it.
You've greased
your wheels.
But when you ask that question, I really want to, like, come through with, like, a great tour story or something. Like, what was it, though? What's the weirdest thing?
Yeah, you gave us a pretty good one already with your Olympia story. And old, the General Lee or whatever this guy's name was.
Right. Yeah, General Lee's a good name for him.
Yeah, that's
I'm
what
gonna
I decided
call him that
to go
from
with.
Now
it.
On.
Perfect. But yeah, like a weird experience or just, like, something that was just so, like, holy fuck, what the hell was that? Like, because I, like I said, I did not tour much, but in 2 tours, I had, like, 50 of those experiences.
Right.
Yeah.
Right,
or just,
right,
like,
shit
that came up after the show. People come up to you and are just like, hey.
Because people can get very familiar with you if they, like, listen to your music and they, like, feel like they already know you. And that's a weird experience having somebody come up to you with that, I think.
Yeah. I mean, like, basically, like, the freshest one I have, I probably shouldn't be telling a story, because, like, I was like, you know when you get, like, angry, and I was, like, furious to the point at which, like, I couldn't do anything but, like, be angry, you know what I mean? Like, I was just, like, every conversation I had was kind of just, like, tainted with this, just, like, I'm lit up a bit right now, but I don't even, like, when I think back, I was, like, I was kind of... You know, I play shows, and it's this huge adrenaline rush.
Yeah.
Like, if I was going to, like, get in, like, a really good fight and just kick the shit out of somebody, like, right after a show, I would destroy
them. My God. I can't fall asleep for hours. Like, if I play until 2 in the morning and then I come home, I'm up until 6.
Yeah.
Just trying to wind down just from, like, a simple show, like, at the whatever.
And
like,
that's why people claim, like, that drugs and music are quite related, is a lot of people just doing down, like, or downers. After shows, because they're just like, well, I need to go be moving.
Where's my bucket of benzos?
Yeah, exactly. It's like, I need to be moving in 5 hours to my next gig that's 8 hours away. I need sleep. I need to go down.
Mm-hmm.
So, but, like, I played this show last weekend, and this is like such a typical occurrence for me. Like, this encounter with this woman. So I go over, the headliner's finished, and I'm just like, We're all done, so I move towards the merch table. Maybe somebody wants to talk or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
So I go to the merch table, and there's, like, these two women, and they're, like, picking up my CDs. And I'm like, oh, I'll, like, say hi to them or whatever. She's like, which CD should I get? Which CD should I get? And I was like, oh, I don't know, get the new one. It's like longer. I don't know. Like, I just, like, point at one. Like, just do it confidently, right? Like, get that one. That's my favorite. She's like, does this have the Africa song on it? And I'm like,
What?
Yeah, I'm like,
are you Toto?
I'm sorry, but I don't really know what you're talking about. She's like, well, the song that says, like, this and, like, help is needed and blah, blah, blah. Oh, okay. I'm like, well, it's actually a song kind of more about the Middle East. But, like, I don't say this.
Yeah, the Middle East is
there's
in
gonna
Africa.
Be a lot of, there's going to be a lot of things that were just, like, my inner dialogue, mm-hmm. my inner monologue sure. that I will say now that I didn't actually say to her. Just do your own filtering.
Sure.
And so, anyway, she's like, and I'm like, well, that's a new song. It's not, I'm going into the studio next week to record these songs, and that'll be on my next album, but, you know. Like throws it down. Like, I want you need to record the Africa song. I'm like, I'm recording the Africa song.
Jesus.
So the conversation goes on, and like, it just became one of those conversations where like, I feel like there's a really great way. Somebody should do a tutorial or something on how to tell people to fuck off in a really kind way. Like, just to be like...
I feel like I could probably
teach a
disc set about
this
easily.
There's got to be, like, so many beautiful ways that you can send people on their merry way and they'll feel, you know, like they're really connected with you and that you didn't tell them to F off. But really, like, really I needed to send them on their merry way and talk to my other people who were buying CDs and wanted me to sign them or whatever.
Weren't
making me furious. And she's just... I tell it like I'm going to Africa, and it would be such a good theme song for my trip. Like I'm going to work, blah blah blah. And I'm like, yeah. I mean, like when I get it recorded, like I'll, you know, like it's not. I'm sorry, it's not ready. And she's already like I've already lost this sale or whatever. And she's just like, I'm a teacher, and you should totally come out and play at my school. I'm out in Surrey, and like it'd be such good exposure. And
no,
blah, 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 blah.
That's my landlord does not take exposure for rent money.
I know, and I'm just like, you know, it basically gets into like a fiscal debate, and you know, like, and I kind of like made some off color joke about how like, yeah, for the right price, I'll totally come and play for your school. It's like, no, you got to give back, and like. Like, you, like, it's good exposure and blah, 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 blah. And I'm like, honey, people try and sell me an exposure, like, every fucking 20 minutes. Like, get out of my face.
Yikes.
I don't swear at her, but I'm like, honey, I've heard the whole exposure debate.
Honey.
Yeah. And I'm like, she's like, well, you gotta give back. And I'm like, you just put down my CD. Like, you gotta give back. Like, I do slap her in the shoulder. I'm like, you gotta give back. Sorry, that's too intense. I'm sorry. But I did slap her like that. So, but I was just like, and we had this long, like, drawn out conversation about, like, and I wanted to educate them on, like, how I don't make much money doing what I do. I'm not famous. I didn't make enough money tonight to pay for my gas and rental. Like, mm-hmm. This is a sideshow. You put down my CD. And I didn't even make $10 there. Like,
so you were kind of upset about that.
I'm talking about it. I'm yelling again. Like, I was really like lit up by this. But my problem was that I really wanted to like hammer it home to them that they didn't get it.
Yeah.
And that it like it's all I wanted was gas money. I was like, just give me, like, just make it so that like I can get out to Surrey with my stuff, play the song for your kids. But there was this idea mm-hmm. that because I'd written a song that was kind of socially aware and that was kind of about, you know, helping out people that are less fortunate than you, then I had, that I was obligated to give it away and I was obligated to, like, give it back. And I was really, really miffed by this whole conversation. And it was
like... Do
you
think you're Bob Geldof or something? Like, you're going to go sing your Africa song to the students?
Yeah,
like,
maybe, yeah. But at the same time, I just wanted to be like, your 8 to 13 year olds probably aren't gonna fucking like me. Like, like I wanted to say, it's like, yeah, it's great.
You're not
Macklemore. It's like you're sending me to an old folks home and being like, play the electric set. People have the exposure. There's like 200 old people. It's like, yeah, they're not gonna get it and they're not gonna like it. Mm-hmm. Maybe one person is, but that's not like That's not exposure, honey.
No.
Anyways, I was pretty upset.
And, like, you're definitely meeting her condescension with condescension. Just like...
Yeah, no, totally. Honey. Honey.
What can you do, though? Like, when you're already tired, like, you've given... You've left it all on stage, right? Yeah. Like, that's so... Yeah, that sense of, like, entitlement to you is a weird thing, I think, that comes in any kind of, like, performance. I don't know if that's true for every... type of performance.
It appears quite a bit.
Yeah. I had a weird experience because I just played at our union, put on an art show for a lot of our staff members, and I performed my original material for like the first time kind of ever. Mm-hmm. And it felt really cool and whatever, and a lot of people really liked it, and it was really fun. And then a dude came up to me afterwards to be like, you know what you should really do?
Oh, God.
Is you should record that. I think it would be amazing on an album. I was like, gee... Never fucking considered that. Amazing. Thank you.
Thank you. Yeah.
Thank you. Thank you for believing in me. Like, I was just like, I'm gonna.
what's recording? What's recording?
Do you have a wax cylinder machine? Yeah. Horse-drawn buggy?
It was just like, no, you don't need to... No, you don't need to tell me what to do.
I'm a 38-year-old man. I want to go up and tell a woman how to do things. Like,
yeah,
she really needs my guidance on this.
It really was that. You know what you really should do is record it. I'm like
it really sounds like he's gonna lay down something that's like really helpful. It's like, you know what you really need to do is like, I have an uncle and he does this thing like on the internet. And it's,
you know,
like,
what?
Weird,
I even fucking hate that though too.
But at least that's semi helpful.
Yeah, totally, sure.
Yeah,
you just don't really want people to tell you what to do ever.
Oh, me?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, never.
I think you really, in those situations, that you really have to, like, just sort of, like, take a step back and realize that they really, like, the lady, she was really trying to help me.
They're showing their enthusiasm in a way that they know how. We have this experience of how the industry or whatever, or how our own stuff works. We don't need the advice, but I guess you could, just be like, okay, thanks. Bye.
Yeah, exactly. And not be like, do you know what condescending means?
I got it. Actually...
Do you know what condescending is?
Yeah. I had kind of a weird... I had a really weird experience like that recently. Like, I started doing comedy, like, in the last year or so, and, like, I posted a set on Facebook, and it got a lot of really good response, and then, like, a few days later, I got a message from somebody who I adore, who is a lovely person, but the message that I got was, like... just so you know, so I'm going to preface this with saying that I have very lofty, like, comedic taste. I only like British comedies, and I'm, like, a very hard person to make laugh. So it's like, I must have laughed out loud at least 3 times during your 8-minute set. So I'm like, what do you want me to say to that? Like,
yeah.
I was like, thank you, that's very nice. But it's also like, why did you have to make that so much about you and how, like, you're such a discerning critic and that I barely met your standards and that I should be so proud of that? Like, I should do fucking cartwheels.
Right.
Yeah. It's people want to set up the, like, well, if you're getting praise from me, it really means something.
But it's like, just be nice.
Yeah.
Like, just be nice without couching it that way.
Mm-hmm. Right. Well, yeah, no, exactly. They've brought their own ego into it.
Exactly,
yeah.
And I know it's a sincerity thing, and I know that they're just trying to really drive home the point, like, hey, I really like it. Exactly. This isn't me saying it just because
I laughed my ass
off
at your
comedy. Yeah, and it's not just because I'm your friend or whatever.
But. I did laugh my ass off, but, like, that's what they're saying.
Yeah.
I laughed my ass off at your comedy, but, like, yeah, they're hammering their ego home for some
reason. Yeah, that whole, like, just so you know, I'm a very busy and important person, and my thoughts on this are extra important and much more so than the people you're even closer to, because they're going to just lie to you, but I'm not going to lie to you. I'm going to tell you the truth. I'm
totally.
Like,
okay. It's unnecessary.
Well, I think,
but you know what? I'm hungry for praise, so I'll take whatever I can get.
I
hate this, but I was like, rub it all over myself.
I thought, I watched it, I thought you were, I was so, like, comfortable. I was taking a dump. I was watching it on my phone.
Fixed.
I was like surfing my phone, and then I was like, 7 minutes, I'll watch it.
That's great. It's a great amount of time to take a dump.
And it was just like...
Just laugh it on out.
It was, yeah, I just laughed it out, you know?
I'm so glad I
almost wrote a message, because, like, you know, I watched it, and then I'm like, you know, you, like, sit in the toilet too long, and you get up, and your legs are numb, and you're like, oh, God!
No, I don't know what that's like.
Oh, you fall over. And, you know, that's what happened to me. And I almost, like, commented and then wrote, like, more about, like, actually, this is what just happened to me. But
because that's what happened in her set. with the pussy numb.
Pussy
thing.
Numb.
Right. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. That's exactly it. So I was like, oh,
I tried so hard to not say pussy during that joke, and now I'm like, pussy, 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 pussy. Sorry, Mom.
I know.
She's not listening to this. She hates me.
I just started watching, like, the Nikki Glaser show, and she just says pussy all the time, and I'm like, normally I hate it, but I'm like, it's normalized in my vocabulary for today.
It's okay.
Today.
Yeah. I'm not
anyway,
so bothered.
Whatever.
Not buffered.
But I think that's the thing, though, is
Jesus
that
Christ.
One of the hardest parts about being an artist, besides from the fact that, like, nobody really pays you for what you do, and it's just, like, this ongoing battle, is that you're always just, like, putting these things up, like, oh, here's a piece of my heart and soul. And, like, they're, like, doormats that you just, like, lay out that people can come, like, and, like lift up to the heavens or just, like, stomp all over. And like, I think that was one thing that I realized, like, when I remember, I thought about a lot with Spark That Screams when we were in the band, is that, like, everybody always had to, like, talk about whether it was good or bad. You know what I mean? Like, or, like, when people, like, talk about it, like, it's always good or bad. Like, a critic is always going to shit on it or love it. Mm-hmm. And I'm always like, why is it just those two extremes? And why is it even good or bad? Like, maybe I'm not even trying to be good or bad. Maybe I'm trying to touch you. Maybe I'm trying to make you think. Maybe I'm trying to excite you or whatever that is. Like, whatever, like, experience we're trying to, you know, make happen, manifest within us in this, you know, environment. Like, why does it have to be good or bad? There are so many other options. But, like, everybody's just like, I like that song. I didn't like the rest. I only like this. Or, like, whatever. And you're like, why does it have to be good or bad? I don't... Okay.
Yeah.
But that's it, right? It's like, you're an artist. You're a comedian. You're a songwriter. I'm a songwriter. We're going to put our stuff out there. And that's our reality now. Everybody's going to tell us if it's good or bad.
Yep. Yep. You throw it out there, and then they bat it back. And it's like, oh, I don't want this at all.
Yeah. I think a theme that's been coming up a lot, and also in the, like, the books that I've been reading and stuff, too, where it's just like, you just kind of have to, and you've said it already, like, four times in this podcast, just do the thing.
Yeah.
And I think that's kind of become the theme of the show,
just
almost.
Do it.
Where
just
it's
do
like,
the thing.
Because,
you guys are doing the thing.
Because you're going to get all kinds of weird feedback, and if that drives you, it will drive you fucking
cuckoo
bananas.
Oh, yeah, exactly.
So, like, you just have to put it out there and just deal with whatever the feedback that you get is and keep doing it anyway.
Yeah. And I find sometimes, like, the more negative feedback, like, when I'm booking shows or trying to go after publicity, like, the more no's I get, the more I'm like,
fuck you.
I'm going to do this thing. You don't think I can? Well, I'm going to show you. Like,
yeah,
you know what I mean? Like,
I'll book myself next door, and I'll draw a huge crowd.
Yeah.
I'll draw people from your
venue.
And
I'll draw a dick on your van.
Yeah.
Yeah. Spite is not the most clean burning fuel that you can really access in terms of why you should do it, but it's cheap and it's accessible. And
yeah,
it's kind
and when
of,
you need to go real fast, real quick.
Yeah,
it's,
sometimes spite's a good
just
motivator.
Put spite in your engine.
Yeah.
Put spite in your pipe and smoke.
I found recently that, like, you know, like, a good place to get, like, really upset is, like, social media. Like, somebody
posts, oh, really?
Something. Yeah, like, somebody posts something really infuriating or just, like, really close-minded or whatever it is, racist. And I found that, like, as opposed to, like, giving this person a piece of my mind, like, in the comments section, I'm just like, no, I'm gonna go right. You know, like, that, like, as opposed to just, like, fueling, like, just, like, putting it all into, like, I'm going to argue with you and you're wrong or whatever that is.
They're
just
screaming,
like, no,
at a wall, right?
Yeah, exactly. You're like,
be the wall.
They're not going to really hear you probably.
Yeah,
they're
so why not generate something kind of beautiful out of that?
Exactly.
Transmogrify your feelings.
Transmogrification.
Yeah, get yourself a cardboard box, write something on the side, crawl into it, and just scream, and then a song's going to come out.
Yeah.
Like a spark.
Calvin
that just,
style.
A spark that just screams.
Spark that screams.
Like a lover who something, something, tongue to your chest, something, something. It's a Neutral Milk Hotel lyric.
Oh, probably.
Yeah. I can't believe I forgot. Josh McNorton's going to kill me next time I see
him. We need to take a position on the Milk Hotel.
Did you listen to this podcast?
I don't know.
I doubt it. I fucking doubt it. It's too sensitive.
Yeah. Actually, he probably doesn't. I don't know. We just
released the first episode.
I can't imagine that he would think anything other than, like, ugh, and just throw it away.
Josh McNorton's very supportive of me and my
He likes
no
you.
I love you, Josh.
No
You're
thanks.
Very nice to me. Josh McNorton knows all my secrets. Not even you know all my secrets. Josh McNorton knows all of my secrets. He could...
I know secrets that Josh McNorton doesn't know, though.
I don't think he do.
Oh, has he been spending a lot of time with you in the last 5 years?
No.
But I tell him lots of
stuff. Oh, do you? You just tell your secret
telegram. How do you keep up with him
telegram?
Oh, we send emails.
Oh, nice.
So I guess Google and NSA knows all my secrets.
He's my nemesis and I have to kill him. And all the secrets are going to come out of him and go into me, and I think that's how it works.
You just have to eat his soul.
Yep. I'm coming for you, McNorton. I'm coming to the UK in September. Watch, and I'm going to suck your soul.
I'm glad you said soul.
I'm so mad I'm going to suck your dick.
I'm going to suck your soul.
Is that a good place to end it?
Yeah.
I think so.
Just shit talking Josh McNorton.
I think so.
It's not sincere. I don't even know you.
Yeah.